across the UK, online and on DAB. The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Was going to talk about immigration and the changes that may or may not happen in this country as a result of Brexit. But listening to the news, I can't help but think some thoughts about the morning after pill. Because there's one particular aspect of the whole business of conception that has always confused me. And it's quite possible that the collected intelligence of the people who are here working on the programme this evening, Sam, good evening, Kath, good evening, the other side of the glass screen in the control room, Nikki and Tommy here in the studio in for Ian Lee, good evening.
Evening.
Nikki. The business about when a person becomes a person is probably something that will never, ever be settled, along with what is gravity, along with how did life actually begin on planet Earth. If you're not a Christian, if you're not a creationist, how did it actually begin? And if it began as a result of a spark of lightning hitting some sort of primal soup and life beginning, cells dividing, why can't they recreate that in a laboratory? And they can't. And so many imponderables. But when does life begin? See, I was working in South America about 25 years ago, right in the jungle, in the middle of Peru, in the middle of nowhere. And the tribe that we were working with had some very, very interesting ideas. One of their interesting ideas was that if a child was born to any of the tribes for 100 miles around with what we nowadays call Down syndrome, then the people of every village would make this pilgrimage to see this baby, to meet this baby, to appreciate the fact that this baby just did love.
Isn't that wonderful? Oh.
So they're not daft. Now, here's the other thing. When's your birthday, Nikki?
1st of January.
Nope. Not if you're a South American native Indian of these tribes.
What is it, conception?
It's the day you conceive.
Really?
Yes, siri, Bob.
Oh.
How about that?
Yes.
Because you've got to do a little bit of...
Well, if you work it out,
there.
Actually, Christmas Day... 29 months on, 25th of September, is the most popular birth date.
Okay, so that would mean that you were born in March.
Probably New Year's Eve. Oh, no. Yes, March. Math is a bit wrong.
You were born in March.
Yes.
The cells that were you began dividing on that date. Okay, so how does that affect the whole business of abortion and it's a woman's body? It could actually work against people who carry people inside them in what we call pregnancy in a way that they don't want it to work, and therefore I don't want it to work because I sadly will never know what it's like to carry a child inside me. It's an incredible thing, but it would be mine and I wouldn't want anybody else passing legislation or telling me what I can and can't do with that circumstance. Okay, so I don't want to go there with that, but what I do want to do is go to somewhere that I think it's an amusing, but nevertheless an important thing to think about. Right. It's basically this. Do sperms have rights?
Of course they don't.
They're living things. Aren't they? They're alive. They're extremely alive.
Yes.
They couldn't possibly be more alive. They are carrying a very individual imprint of somebody who may or may not become a person.
But then... does an ant have rights? I mean, where do you draw the line?
I don't like killing ants.
No, either. I don't. I can't kill ants.
My father, if an ant ran across the draining board when he was doing the washing up, he'd just put it down, put his thumb, pick it up.
And people get boiling kettles and, can't do that.
No, exactly. And I tend to try to usher everything out of the window.
So,
if it's flying, if it's a wasp, I am prepared to do a wasp in. I did a wasp in this morning. I went to the upstairs cubicle, loo. And there was a wasp, very groggy, on the top of the seat. And I didn't know what quite to do about it, because there's nothing in there that you can biff a wasp with. You can't biff a wasp with toilet tissue.
Did you not have a shoe on or anything?
No, I was just wearing pyjamas.
Oh, you had literally just got up.
Yes. So what I did was, and I felt bad about it, but a wasp is a wasp. And it's in the upstairs, and people are going around not entirely dressed.
Mm.
So I got some toilet tissue and wrapped it up big, so it was quite thick. And it couldn't sting me through it. And I grabbed the wasp and I put it down and I flushed. And I felt bad about it.
I couldn't have even done that to a wasp. we digress.
Do you ever come across a dead wasp in the hall?
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah. What do you do with it? Can you pick up a dead wasp and not get stung?
Yes, I've done that. I've picked it up by its wings.
But they say that the sting lives on and the reflex of stinging you continues in the wasp after its apparent demise.
I can believe that. That's why I'm very careful just getting its little wings and picking it up.
So we've gone from the morning after pill, which is a news story, a hot news story.
Yes.
Through gravity, how did life begin on Earth, conception, stories about how it's possible to celebrate Down syndrome rather than find it difficult. And also, is one born the moment one is conceived rather than the moment one actually pops out? Let's move on. Because one of the things that I did want to talk about and planned on talking about today, and we discussed it at our pre-programmed journalistic meeting, is the whole business of the fact that if you voted Leave, you're probably beginning to wonder if you're going to get any bang for your buck. Because I think everybody accepts now that the $360 million to the National Health Service, a diversion from money that was going to Brussels, Strasbourg, wherever, we know that's not going to happen.
And that's not definitely happening.
Now, what we're hearing today, the headline of the Times, is that Gove says that immigration levels will remain the same for 2 years, possibly longer, means that that thing that you might have voted for isn't going to happen, or at least maybe not in your lifetime. That leaves you with only one thing, doesn't it? Yeah. Only one. There were three basic pledges that were made by Boris, who was basically the boss of the Brexit campaign, and he had two kind of deputies, one in his party, Michael Gove, and the other one not in his party, Nigel Farage. And they were all more or less making three big promises. There was some detail, not a lot, but three big promises.
Correct.
Immigration, diverting money to the National Health Service, and taking back control of lawmaking and giving it to Parliament and taking it away from Strasbourg. Now, that one has yet to be held below the waterline as far as I can see. And yet, if you read, and nobody has read, just like nobody's read the Maastricht Treaty, nobody has read the Great Repeal Bill, I haven't yet come across any single piece of legislation that was passed by Europe and imposed on this country or accepted by this country, which is going to be repealed. It's simply going to be absorbed into British law or English and Welsh law, depending on whether the devolved parliaments go along with it, have the right to go along with it. Oh, I'm not going there. That's too complicated. What I'm basically saying is that we are going to be making our own laws in this country again.
Hooray.
Hooray. But what are we going to be depriving ourselves of? What are we going to be denying Brussels and Strasbourg and Berlin and Paris from imposing on us against our will? There have been, over the last 30 years, since Jacques Delors addressed the trade unions in this country and announced that in the not-too-distant future all laws will be made in the European Parliament. This was a big mistake by Jacques Delors because it gave Fleet Street the opportunity to come up with something which was a catchphrase for a decade, which was up yours, Delors. He shouldn't have said that. He should have gone to a different meeting. He should not have addressed the trade unions that day and said what he said. That was the beginning of the end of Europe as far as an awful lot of British newspapers, and therefore people, are concerned. It seems to me that there have been some laws, at least some newspapers have reported that there have been some laws that have been passed in Europe and imposed on this country by people in Brussels who are what they call bonkers. And probably the most famous one is that our bananas mustn't be too curved.
Correct.
Let's have a look, Nikki, because I've done some digging. Let's have a look at some of the laws that allegedly were passed in Europe and imposed on this country, which prove that the EU is bonkers. And that's the first one. Crazy Brussels diktat that bananas must not be too curved.
Not the whole truth. There are rules on fruit quality in every developed country. If there were not one set of rules for the whole of the EU, each member state would have its own, creating havoc for transport and trade. So national agricultural ministers and the industry in the 1990s asked the European Commission to draft common legislation on this. Some rules still exist, but they have to be reformed to cut red tape to a minimum.
OK. So basically it's a bit of common sense. Yeah. fruit and vegetables have to conform to certain standards.
Yeah, that is common sense.
How about this one? And I don't remember this one myself, but it's recorded as being a scare story that was put out about laws that were being made in Brussels and imposed on us. The EU has banned people from eating their own pet horses.
Not true. You could eat your own pet horse if you wanted to, though that is not known to be common practice. But it is true that eating horse meat is popular in some countries. So it's important that people raising and slaughtering horses for meat cannot avoid food safety and traceability rules by passing them off as pets. All makes sense. To give one example, domestic horses are sometimes treated with the drug phenylbutazone, but animals treated with it are not considered safe for human consumption. All horses have for many years needed to have a passport, and since 2009, this specifies, among other things, whether or not they are destined to enter the commercial food chain.
So the fact is, could there possibly be anybody who has two brain cells to rub together who could possibly, for one moment, for a nanosecond, think that this is anything other than common sense? You cannot rear livestock and get away with changing the practices that you have to adhere to if that is going to be eaten by calling them pets. That's a law now, and yet our newspapers were calling it bonkers.
Not true.
Let's come back, because we've got a few more like these, and some of them are even more phantasmagorical. But what else have we got on the show tonight? We're hoping to have the resolution of our search for the most irritating person, celebrity, in the United Kingdom at the moment. And we've refined our list from last night's 70 or 80 down to a top 20. So yes, we'll be going through the top 20. And there's still space if anybody wants to nominate anybody who is not yet on the list,
yes,
correct?
Any late contenders, yeah, you want to get on that list, get in touch with us on 0344 499 1000. Text TALK and your message to 87222, or you can tweet, of course, at Talk Radio.
Now, the other thing is this. I'm lucky enough to have been knocking around in broadcasting for a few decades. And so I've seen some changes. And what I need help with is whether or not those changes are for the better or for the worse. And I'm broadly speaking ambivalent at this moment in time. But what I thought would be a good exercise to do would be to play a couple of little extracts from programmes that were broadcast in this radio station's previous incarnation, which was Talk Radio again, going back 20 years.
20 years, right, OK.
And asking the question amongst ourselves and of you listening as well, would that work today? Is it clearly outdated and outmoded because we're all much more modern than we were then? Or are we a bunch of prudes compared to what we were like 20 years ago?
Well, everything's so PC now.
And you have to be so careful. You really don't want to diss the PC movement, because often it means just be polite, be kind to each other, be good to each other. But at the same time, it can be very constraining. I've been working with Kath and Sam on this one. Kath's on the phones at the moment. But what I've managed to do is get hold of a little collection of trails for some of the programmes that were done on the old Talk Radio station. And the question is, I think, it's only 20 years ago. That's not a very long time.
No.
Could you do it nowadays? Would you want to do it nowadays? Would it work nowadays? Are we better off for the changes in broadcasting, the media and society that have taken place, or are we a little bit disempowered?
That's an interesting experiment. I like that.
How are we doing with that audio, Kath? Any good news?
OK, so we can use the stuff from online.
OK.
It's a bit clunky, so if you give me a little bit of warning.
OK.
And, like, fill for 30 seconds, we should make it nice and smooth and no one will ever know we're having trouble.
Okay. Should we give it a go?
Yeah. Which one do you fancy?
Play anything now off the list.
OK, well, we'll do this one.
And just at random. And so this would have been a trailer for a show which actually went out on this radio station about 20 years ago.
So about late 90s.
Something like that. Mm.
Marriage. It works because it's a done deal and you've got it down in writing. So why don't we do the same thing when we have an affair?
Do you, Tommy Boyd, take this woman to be your lawful bit on the side?
I do.
And do you, Elizabeth Hayworth Booth, promise not to get pregnant or too serious or spy on his wife?
I do.
I'm Tommy Boyd. Affairs. They're fantastic. As long as you agree everything in advance. That's today from 2, with lots of late nights at the office, some petrol on your jeans to hide the perfume, and no boiled rabbit. On Talk Radio, there's a good argument for listening.
Okay, well, put the performance aside, because I'm a little bit more laid back now than I was then. I was very enthusiastic, very youthful, very energetic, very hormonal. So the question is this, and I think you could today do a show or do a programme about adultery.
Absolutely.
There's lots of ways of doing it. One is
it's happening more and more, adultery, with all the social media, isn't it, I think?
Yes. It's certainly not happening any less than it used to.
No.
So adultery's always been there. It's a question of how do we talk about it in the media? And the obvious way to talk about it would be to get somebody in from an organisation like Relate and ask them how it comes about and what the effects are and how it damages the family and how it can, on the other hand, be something of a release to people and so on and so forth. You can do it that way. Or you can take the mickey out of the serious side of it by doing it the way that we did it 20 years ago. And you could do that again, couldn't you?
Yeah, that's timeless, I think. That's fine.
Kath's the professional journalist amongst us, so I'm going to ask her whether that, as a topic, done that way.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that one.
Get
definitely.
Yes from
you. Thumbs up.
Definitely.
Okay. All right, we'll crank up another one then, and we'll just.
All right.
But just before you do that, how do you know about the petrol on the jeans to hide the smell of perfume?
Yeah, that was new to me as well.
Okay, well, that was that. I won't get into.
Someone's told you, obviously.
Trouble. Yeah, the genius who made these trails, who is. Within the province of what he does in radio, easily the most talented man in his field. I think he won the Sony Gold Award for this kind of radio, creative it's called.
That's like an Oscar, basically, radio.
Stings, trails, programme theme tunes. He won the Oscar, the Sony, for that, I think something like 7 or 8 times in a row.
And wow.
He just got fed up with receiving it. He, I think, dropped out and said, don't give it to me anymore. It's ridiculous. It's cluttering up the mantelpiece. Man called Peter G. And it was him who wrote that and him who... And when I heard putting some some lighter petrol fluid on your trousers to get rid of the smell of her perfume, I went, just like you did a few moments ago, I went... That's a good tip, isn't it? And for some reason, not that I'm planning on committing adultery, I just sort of filed it away slightly and I thought, but then again, he was a heavy smoker at the time.
And some people listening now who are in the middle of having an affair will be thinking,
that's a great
tip, Tommy.
Yeah. Okay, well, take another one of these little trails. go on.
It was a full moon last night.
Ooh.
Mental health. It's not that important. What is it anyway?
What's what? Who are you looking at?
I'm going slightly mad.
We're Tommy Boyd, today from 2, with a bit of a headache, an appointment on Tuesday, and no more coffee. On Talk Radio, there's a good argument for listening.
Now, you can't do it. You couldn't
you
do that.
You can't get away with that.
No, and yet, now, is that right or wrong? I wouldn't do it. I'd be very hesitant about doing a programme with tongue in cheek, suggesting that there's nothing much wrong with with having mental health problems.
How many times have you been sacked off radio stations?
More than anybody else.
Exactly.
Considerably more than anybody else.
I think you could add another one to that if you did it that style now.
Yeah, and yet we've just played the trail and we've had a laugh. People have laughed, we're Tommy Boyd. That sort of shallow, inaccurate reflection of what schizophrenia isn't. Does it do any harm? Could you get ultra defensive about it and say that by suggesting that we could not possibly seek perfect mental health because it can never exist, a good thing to do is to say that each of us have our quirks?
Yes,
could
but
you justify
I think,
doing it in a funny way?
No, I don't
like
think
that?
So.
I'm going to see.
I don't think so. I think no.
I can tell from the look of the professional journalist's face that she's wondering whether she can go thumbs up or thumbs down on...
I think there might be a way to do it, but you'd have to be really, really careful.
There you go, you see.
Mm.
Because you would not
get away with that now.
Rather than one of these kind of worthy, let's all talk about mental health days, for example, I would much rather hear something spun a little differently that invites different stories,
More real.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe the
it's a very...
maybe the blah, 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 was a step too far.
That was a step too far. So the trial would be different.
It's just cut that bit out and it's fine.
The trail is what she's saying. Okay. All right, so this evening on the show, good evening, listening. Thank you for your company. If you're podcasting Walking the Dog, then you missed it live. And somehow I think it's just marginally better live. But at least if you podcast, you've got ownership. And tonight we're talking about the fact that it looks as though the only thing that Brexiteers are going to get from Brexit is that certain laws that they think or were told were funny laws that were passed by the EU, bonkers Brussels, don't need repealing because they're actually quite sensible. But it's fun to talk about. We're also talking about how far has broadcasting moved forward, or has it moved backwards, over the last 20 years. And our search for the most irritating celebrity in the United Kingdom goes on. And we will, I think, have the winner of that accolade in about the last hour of the programme or so, something
good
like
idea.
That. Nikki, you've got the details of how people can contact the show.
Yeah, give us a call. If you've got an irritating celebrity you want to add to the list or any other comments on the show, 0344 499 1000. You can text talk in your message to 87222. Text costs 25p and your standard network rate. Or you can tweet at Talk Radio.
Kath, it is your speech, too, if you call the show. It's Nikki and Tommy in the studio, in for Ian Lee. And Sam is pressing the buttons like this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
In for Ian Lee, Nikki's here. Kathy, you'll speak to. She's the journalist producer in charge. If you call the number, and Sam is pressing the buttons, and it's one big family, yourself being the fifth leg. Are there any five-legged animals? There aren't, are
no.
there? We'll come back to that because the EU and... No, there aren't. Are there any animals an odd number of anything?
Not odd numbers, I don't think.
We only have one heart, don't we? That's about the only odd-numbered thing there is in the whole of nature. Am I right? Sorry, I got distracted by maths. And I'll tell you why. During the commercial break, Kath came in aglow. And the reason for that... Well, two reasons. But the first reason... I think was the thing that made her most aglow, and that is because you, Nikki, she's just discovered your birthday is...
The 1st of January.
And the 1st of January is also the birthday of...
Her youngest daughter.
Now, what are the odds?
I'll tell you what's the worst day of the year to have a birthday. I feel sorry January for her daughter. It is, because everybody's hungover, nobody wants to do anything.
Oh, Christmas Day is close second.
I don't think it's as bad.
But how, you only get one set of presents.
You do that with New Year's Day as well. They go, here's your Christmas and birthday present. I say, would you do that if my birthday was the 1st of July? No, you wouldn't. I want two presents, please.
Well, I have a daughter whose birthday is the 23rd of December, and so she gets a half birthday in June.
You see, that's what I keep thinking about doing. I left it a bit late, Mike.
I was going to say...
Shut up.
Talking about death in the production room a bit earlier. Kath, when is your birthday, just out of interest, then?
12th of August.
12th of August.
That's a nice time.
So you were the oldest or the youngest person in your class?
Youngest.
Youngest. Of course you were. Smallest.
Well, yeah, for a while. And then it all kind of evens out in the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it takes a while, doesn't it? I mean, when you're five, those 12 months are enormous.
Oh, yeah, they are.
That gives somebody who was born in September a 25%, I lied there, 15%, advantage over you in every respect.
I tell you where it was the most marked, the difference was sports days.
That's what I was coming to.
I was speaking to a sports scientist once and he said that Olympians, you know, professional athletes tend to be the oldest kids in the year.
I've done the numbers on it because I was so convinced it was true. I used to run junior football teams and I took one team to a tournament in Hindhead and I got talking to another dad who had a team and I said, how do you do it? You know, do you have trials and things like that? He said, no, I just ask them when they're born. If they're born in September, they're in the team.
Oh.
Because they're huge.
Mm. Yeah.
And I can remember.
I've never thought of that actually, but good point.
Well, now if you get your Rothmans Soccer Annual, this little tiny book, it's very, very small and very, very thick, and it's full of information about football, including who plays for every team, how tall they are, and when they were born. Mm. And so, because I used to travel on trains a lot and didn't have much to do, I decided to check on the birthdays of all the footballers in the Premier League, and it turns out that. The majority of them were born during the autumn, with the most the most popular month being September, followed just by October, then November, then December. And there are hardly any professional footballers born in June. About the only one ever found was Michael Owen.
Very interesting.
So there it is. What about you, Sam? When were you born?
July the 3rd.
So you were a young
youngster
in your... And did that mean that you never got given a football?
No.
Oh, of course, Christmas there was, I suppose.
Yeah.
Were you any good at football or cricket or tennis or anything?
Tennis, I was. Yeah, it was more my
Ah, well, that's because you were born in July.
Yeah, summer sport, isn't it?
So you were given a tennis racket for your birthday. That's why we're rubbish at tennis in this country. Because Christmas falls during the non-tennis season. Same with cricket. I never got a cricket bat, even though cricket was my sport, because my birthday's in December, Christmas is in December. Nobody thinks of giving you a cricket bat in December. So all these things add up, don't they?
Yeah.
Right.
You saying that, because my husband was an ex-footballer, born in January.
There. Where were we? Oh, yeah, it's this. Now, here. You're born in December the... No, January the 1st.
1st of January, yes.
And your child... Kath didn't mention names, but we don't do that. So that's... See,
her youngest.
That. Youngest. It's born on the 1st of January. Now, there's only four people here, and there's that birthday coincidence. But Kath's daughter isn't actually here. So the number of people in within this orbit, in other words, our immediate relatives, is probably, what, about 30, something like that. So what do you think the odds are if you had a room full of 30 people? Sam's waving because he knows this one.
I know this.
What are the odds?
You have a 50% chance of...
Correct.
Of sharing your birthday.
How do you know that?
I did maths at A-level and we learned about this. Because isn't it that when you have two people, you have one chance of getting it right.
Yeah.
Then when you add a third person, you're adding two more chances. Fourth person, you're adding three more chances. So the more people you have...
How interesting.
It's an even money bet.
Yeah.
Wow. That if there are 30 people in a room, two of them will share a birthday. But you know how I found out about it?
No.
Through John Major. Oh, yes.
What?
John Major was an accountant and he was trained with numbers and he was aware of this curious fact. And so if he was at a gathering of 30 people or more, he would at some point say to them, "Could I just have your attention for one moment, please, ladies and gentlemen?"
No.
I wonder how many people here would be... I'm not going to carry on doing my job.
That was pretty good. That was his party piece.
Pretty good. That was his party piece.
Yes.
That was his party piece. That was his icebreaker at parties. Mm. And it's a fact.
And that was a very good John Major, by the way.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I like John Major. Yeah. He just broke the mould, didn't he? I mean, I remember that where I was and what I was wearing when I found out that the new foreign secretary left school when he was 16 with just four mediocre O-levels, was turned down for a job as a bus conductor because he wasn't smart enough, and his father was a circus juggler. And his father's first wife was killed in a circus when the safety curtain fell on her. And I thought, no.
I didn't know all those facts.
Did you not?
No. I knew some of them, but not all of them.
No. Very interesting man. Yes. Still going strong. Yes. Let's take our first call. It's thank you very much indeed for calling to Paul in Stoke Poges. Hello, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing again?
I'm still surprisingly well. Thank you.
Okay. I've got comments on all your subjects tonight. First of all, birthdays. My birthday, in its honest truth, is the 3rd of September. The day everyone used to have to go back to school after some holiday, yes.
Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah, it was tough, yeah. Okay, and when I was in junior school, to go to senior school, the teachers had to make a decision whether I was to go up the year I was in or stay down the year an extra year.
Okay, listen, it's very interesting. It's just this. Can we get two callers up at the same time? Okay. Who's our next caller? Oh, well, it's Alan. Alan, hello.
Oh, Tommy.
Alan, could you just be me for a minute? Only I'm dying for a pee.
Okay.
You be me, and you've got Paul on line 10.
Evening, Paul.
Hello, Alan.
How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you.
How's the voodoo coming along?
Yeah, how's the what?
Voodoo.
I don't have any Barbie dolls, no.
No, that's not what I heard on the Talk Radio listeners page.
Okay, Ivine Lee is a doll, yeah.
No, I haven't seen my one yet.
You haven't what?
I haven't seen my doll yet.
Okay. Are you a living doll?
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, the media in general, society in general, the world in general. It's changed. Has it moved forward or has it moved back? I think necessarily it's moved forward because broadly speaking, good does just about triumph over evil.
Yeah, but sometimes we are too PC, aren't we?
Well, I refer you to the great philosopher Stuart Lee on that one. And he always argues that actually political correctness is a good thing because it's about putting other people's feelings into your mind when you're talking, when you're describing people. But yes, you're right. Can you think of an example in your world, Nikki, where political correctness has gone a little bit too far? Because I've got one.
Go on.
Well, I was for whatever reason, I had a group of social workers. I was with a group of social workers and my job was to make the tea and coffee. So I said, who wants tea? Who wants coffee? Coffee, coffee, tea, tea, coffee, coffee. And I said, okay, the coffees. Does anyone want black? And one of the social workers said, it's true, he said, I don't call it black anymore.
Oh, please.
I said, okay. She said, I said,
how'd you say it then?
Without milk.
Oh, for goodness sake, that's just rubbish.
Well, I'm sorry, but what I worked out was going on there was, you know, when you get a group of vegetarians together, they never celebrate the fact that they're all vegetarians. They all try to out-vegetarian each other. What are your shoes made of? You know?
Yeah.
Is that a Bloody Mary? It's got essence of anchovy in it. Sorry. And the same happens, you know, in this regard when social workers...
You see, that frustrates me. I think that's ridiculous.
Well, we're all competitive, aren't we? I mean, look at the Conservative Party. I think it's the most extraordinary thing that actually the Conservative Party is an extraordinarily well-oiled machine. There's something of the Rolls-Royce about the Conservative Party, and yet they seem to spend most of their time with their hands round each other's throats. And yet they manage to keep winning elections and keep getting what they want. And, you know, where were we? I was talking about political correctness. Yes, when social workers get together, it seems to me that what they want to do is out-social work each other. And one of the ways that they can do that is to be the most politically correct of them. Mm. And probably that's where an awful lot of it comes from. But what we're doing is looking at some programmes that were broadcast on a previous incarnation of this station, which was also called Talk Radio. I did some stuff for them as well, and it was considered a bit naughty, and I paid for it in the end. But the question is, could we do programmes like this today, 20 years on, which often had their tongue firmly in their cheek, and I don't think anybody took any great offence, but the question is, could you do it today, and would you want to hear it? Let's listen to another one of these trails, which Kath has pulled down from random...
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Here's a foolproof solution to two problems in one go with no losers. Problem one, a discomforting increase in the number of unwanted rescue dogs. Problem two, an increase in poverty amongst the homeless. Solution? Give every tramp a free dog. It will save the life of every dog, increase the begging potential of every tramp, and whichever one dies first, the other one eats him.
Tommy Boyd, this afternoon from 3 on Talk Radio.
With an Alsatian for a pillow, a chihuahua down your trousers, and a very unusual hat.
Tommy Boyd, from 3, every weekday afternoon on Talk Radio.
I don't have a problem with any of that.
I don't have a problem. I think that's brilliant.
I think the levels on the dog barking could come down.
Yeah, that was my only critique.
I'd have picked them at about 3.5. I think they were coming in at about 4.5 there.
Nothing wrong with that.
You don't hear the word tramp anymore?
No.
When I was a boy, you used to get people. Yes. They seemed very friendly. They were a little bit eccentric. They would have a piece of string around their raincoat instead of a proper belt. They might actually... I do remember one with a backpack and a saucepan hanging from it.
Floppy hat.
Yes. Mm. And my mother used to say, oh, look, there's a tramp. So I don't know why the word tramp was used there when really we were talking about the homeless.
Homeless.
Was it done deliberately just to keep the whole thing as gingered up as possible? I don't know.
I'd not have thought about that, actually, that the word tramp has disappeared and is replaced by the homeless.
Mm. Mm. It's a bit like they used to be called refugees.
Yes.
And that one got moved along as well, probably by people with an agenda. Because language is everything, isn't it? What have we got without language? How do we communicate?
No.
Could we let's get the professional journalist involved again, shall we? And put her neck on the line.
I don't think I'd want to eat dog.
Well, we could come back to that. Mm. Kath, could you do a programme about
giving
the nature of people who have to live on the street and do it in a kind of jokey way, or begin it in a kind of a jokey way by talking about the possibility they should have a free dog?
I think that the key is there, begin it in a jokey way.
Yeah, okay. But then is one using the pretense that one is going to be journalistic about it a little bit later on as an excuse for being...
Yeah, maybe.
Or can we call it satire?
Well, the problem I have, and this is just my initial thought, and I could be convinced otherwise, I think, maybe, is that it's not punching up, it's punching down.
I love that phrase, but I don't understand it.
Are we taking the mickey out of someone who's more vulnerable than us?
Yeah, got it. That's nice. I like that.
Or are we taking someone down who is pompous and perhaps needs to be held to account? You know,
that's a really good point. I'm just going to have to stew on that one. What do you think? That's a really good point.
I think it's a very good point made, actually. So, yes, possibly vulnerable people shouldn't take the mickey too much.
Mm.
But then everybody knows they have dogs.
I don't know where the programme went. I don't know how it worked out. I think it went off in lots of different directions. It went about, you know, begging, you know, because there used to be a chap who used to sit in Oxford Street, which was where the radio station was based at the time, and he would sit in between two cash machines. So you'd have two holes in the wall about 6 feet apart, and he would sit in between them.
Clever.
Well, it wasn't, I didn't think, because... when you've been to a hole in the wall, you've got some tenners and some 20s, okay? And that's probably all you've got, otherwise you wouldn't have needed to go to a hole in the wall. Mm. And you're very conscious of the fact that you've got these big notes. So when somebody then looks up, right, left, and says, have you got any spare change? Have you got any spare change? I think it diminishes your chances of successfully being able to support yourself, you know, by begging. Hate saying the word, actually.
I don't know, because you've got to have a few coins rattling around in your pocket or your purse.
Well, I said to him, I don't think it's a good place to make your bid.
And what did he say to that?
So you're probably right, yeah.
Did he move on?
I don't know. He wasn't there the next day.
Ah, you see, listen, good advice, Tom.
Could be. If you want to call the programme, please feel free. It's Kath that you'll talk to if you do pick up the phone. The number is...
0344 499 1000.
OK. It's Talk Radio. It's Tommy in for Ian Lee. And if you're enjoying it half as much as I am, then I'm enjoying it twice as much as you.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Michael Gove says that in all probability, we'll have to keep immigration levels as they are for at least 2 years. Those are his words. So people who voted Brexit, and that was one of the reasons, ain't going to get that. People who voted Brexit because 360 million, instead of going to Brussels, would go to the NHS. We know they're not going to get that. So all that we've got left is that we can stop Brussels from making these silly laws, which it turns out they never made in the first place. For example... this one. Meddling European lawmakers make it illegal for prunes to be sold as a food that fights bowel problems.
That's not true. After inconclusive supporting evidence was submitted with the first application, in fact, not every scientific study agrees on the digestive effect of prunes, producers put forward an amended application, and the European Food Safety Authority in 2012 recommended that advertisers should be able to claim that dried plums, prunes, can contribute to normal bowel function. This is another example of the EU's science-based system to authorise wordings when health is at stake to avoid consumers being misled by advertising.
What do you do when you can't go?
I just buy pills.
What?
Imodium? No, not Imodium. Yeah, no, Imodium, that stops it, doesn't it? The other one.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It doesn't happen to me very often, to be honest.
No. Can we talk about going? Okay. Yeah. We can do, I think. What do you do, Sam, if you can't go?
I'm all right. So it's hey again?
What do you do if you can't go?
What is in go to?
Go number two. Or does it happen to you? Because you're young, you probably go at the same time every day.
I tend to always need to go when I can.
Okay, you don't have the problem. No. You don't ever feel bunged up?
No.
Do you get that a lot then?
Yeah.
Do you? Is that an age
thing? No, not a lot. No, I get it more than I want, which is once in a year is more than I want. Yeah. It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
To wonder about it, because you start thinking, well, I can't go out now. I was playing football one Saturday morning, and we had this really good player in our team, and he was top notch. We got to the other team's changing rooms, and there were no loos. And his name was Jimmy Ryan, and he ran out onto the pitch with me, and he said to me, I don't know if I can say this exact, yeah, it's 11 o'clock. He just said to me, and it stuck with me forever, this, he said, how am I supposed to play football with £2 up there? And I was running out and I did my spit.
Too much information.
But it stayed with me.
Oh, Lord.
He had waited to go and do his early morning poo just before he played football, but there were no loos. He had to play football, right, wanting to go.
Did it slow him down?
No, he played brilliant because he's a good player. He's a very, very good player. And if anything, he had a lower centre of gravity that day. So he couldn't knock him off the ball. And I always remember dear Caroline Ahern, when she was doing one of her sketches on The Fast Show. And you remember that one where she had that henpecked husband?
Yes.
Yeah, what did I say, Roy? Do you remember? What did I say, Roy? And she just went to him suddenly. She said, anyway, I've got to get up and go to the toilet now, Roy. I've got one peeping through. Which stayed with me forever.
I'll just get that image.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, there you are with that one.
Thank you.
So, prunes, it turns out, the EU, it was published in lots of newspapers, were going to tell us that we couldn't say that prunes would help you go if you were a bit bunged up. And, of course, they don't. It was an old wives' tale. I mean... And yet I think there are people who believe that bonkers people in Brussels have taken over our legislative process and they're imposing all these things and they're all wacky. Yeah. Right. Also, we're looking for the most irritating person celebrity in the United Kingdom and we will have identified that person this evening. But shall we just take a look? Kath's got the list. Kath's going to sit on whoever is the most irritating person in the United Kingdom until the last hour of the programme, for obvious reasons, because we want to keep you listening.
Mm.
But who has made the top 20 but not number one?
Right, oh gosh, have I got to decide who's number one then, or have you decided that?
Well, we decided to leave it to the senior journalist.
Yes.
Oh man,
you
is
get
that me?
That pressure.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, right. Okay.
I've got a couple of late contenders that have come in on the text.
Go on.
Sally from Rye says, Richard Arnold from Good Morning Britain. He's the entertainment guy.
Oh, yes.
She's absolutely right, Sally. I can't bear that man.
He is a bit irritating, isn't he?
Oh, not a bit.
I have seen it.
Extremely irritating. You tune in for
Piers Morgan, but then he gives Piers Morgan some material.
Absolutely.
By doing stuff that Piers Morgan is able to say, what am I here for? Why am I doing this? This is not me. This is so trivial and demeaning. And that's funny. So... Maybe he's playing up to that, no?
I don't think so, because he's been doing it for years and years before Piers Morgan appeared. But brilliant suggestion, Sally. I think that he's got to go in the top 20.
You see, that makes me think of Ross King, and he's another one. Is it something to do with being an entertainment journalist, or is it...
He's
badly unfeasibly dyed hair.
Badly dyed hair. Yes.
Is it more annoying and irritating, or should it not be a question I ask, if men do it than if women do it?
You see, what, dyeing hair? Dyeing hair?
No, we're talking about celebrities.
I don't think it's...
I thought you were saying about dyeing.
I think it's a coincidence that both of those people happen to do that as a job. I just think that they're...
It's just that all the men I've asked who's irritating have talked about men, and all the majority of women that I have asked who's irritating have nominated women.
That's interesting.
And you know, that's not sexist to notice it. It's the case.
An example of that, Joe says, I imagine Joe is a girl, Amanda Holden, talentless.
I don't know who she is.
Amanda Holden?
No.
You do.
I'm too busy. I've got a life.
She used to be married to Les Dennis.
And she's an actress, but she's on a lot of, you know, reality programmes. She's a judge on Britain's Got Talent, which is ironic.
Well, I like the fact that she is supposed to be identifiable as a result of being married to Les Dennis.
That's what she's most famous for.
There was a big hoo-ha, wasn't there? Yeah, I think that's how she rose to fame.
She had an affair.
With Morrissey. What's his name? Neil Morrissey? Mm. He was a very likely lad in the 90s, wasn't he? Yes. Wasn't him?
Yeah.
No?
You're looking blank about Neil Morrissey.
I can't find her irritating because of that. And I can't find Les Dennis irritating anymore because he went on Extras, although I know, you know, that's a very obvious thing to do to get your sort of credibility up and allowed himself to apparently be taking the mickey out of him, as did Patrick Stewart and so on and so forth. But I can't have any views on somebody who I don't know about.
Oh, tell me, okay.
What does she do?
Exactly.
Okay.
Very well said.
All right, here's some.
Go on.
Tess Daly.
Oh, yes. Got to go in the top 20.
Noel Edmonds.
Yes.
Ainsley Harriott. Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I was already steady cook with him. He was lovely.
He's in the top 20. I'll tell you what, the way you should do it, actually, Kath, for sort of, you know, show business, is to say that you might mention the person who is going to be the number one irritating celebrity in the UK today, or you might not.
All right.
You might not.
Well, that's handy, yeah.
And they'll be listening to your tone of voice and the way in which you do it, you know, so, oh, has she let the cat out of the bag there?
Oh, that's cunning, yeah.
So you did Ainsley Harriott with quite a bit of enthusiasm.
Well.
We'll see.
You can draw whatever conclusion you like.
And I will.
Louis Spence.
Yes. Yes, I'm afraid he is irritating, isn't he? Why is that?
I think so many reasons.
I think he's doing it on purpose.
I don't think he is. I think he is genuinely
Has anybody seen him on the cookery programme? A sort of a remainder BBC personality cookery programme?
No.
Ainsley Harriott shows him round places where they sell and make unusual food, because Louis's thing is that he only ever eats good British grub.
Oh, really?
You can imagine that?
Mm.
Oh, cooked breakfast, that's me. Lamb chops in the evening.
He's a
dancer. Nice ham sandwich for lunch.
He's a dancer, he wouldn't eat all that.
Oh, well, he's not really anymore, is he?
Oh, have I got the wrong bloke again? I thought he was the septuagenarian judge on Come Dancing.
Oh, that's Len Goodman.
I was going to say, what was Louis Spence doing on the food show?
And I was also thinking, that's a terrible Louis Spence. There's an obvious impression, but maybe he's steering clear because he's taken the upper ground.
I'm really proud of how little I know about these non-entities.
Oh, you really are.
Yes.
All right. No, Louis Spence is very OTT, and I wonder whether the irritation factor comes from the idea that perhaps he's not being completely authentic. He's very showbiz.
I think putting on irritatingness... we have to see through that.
Yeah.
And we talked about it yesterday. There are people who actually do it deliberately because it draws attention to
Yes, Louis Spence, I think that is him. What do I know?
Well.
Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll rush to the phones and then we'll get another burst of national and international news. And then onwards and upwards. I think Ray is next. Ray, who's on his mobile. Hey, Ray.
Hi, good evening.
Evening.
You were talking about affairs earlier, so I was reading something online today. So before I tell you what it was, the question afterwards will be, who do you think is most at fault? And the story was about a guy, a married man, who decided that he was going to cheat.
Tell you what, this is good, Ray. Can I get you just to pause it right there? You're paying for the call, but tough. We'll take the news and then we'll get straight back to you. How's that, yeah?
Talk Radio.
After the 11 o'clock news, Ray has a conundrum about adultery, EU laws that never were by bonkers Brussels radio, has it moved forward or backwards in the last 20 years, and irritating people, who is the most irritating person in the UK today?
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Part of the reason that we're talking about audio trails from this radio station 20 years ago is because the maker of the audio, the legendary Peter G, called me up a couple of weeks ago and said, and I can do him very well, "Oh, Tommy, do you have any of the audio from back then that we made? Well, I can't find any of it, and I just wondered if you had some." And I don't. But it's on the internet, so it doesn't matter. But the reason I want to get some of this stuff to him is because, for whatever reason, he's still hanging around with the only bit of audio that he could find, soiled, on the floor, at the back, behind a filing cabinet, in the creative department, which is the bum diddly bee la ola boo thing, which is very hard to come off the back of that and talk about something serious such as adultery. But I will. With Ray, who's been very patient. Ray, you're about to pose a question.
Yes, so the question is, who's most at fault? So a gentleman in his mid-50s had been using prostitutes for a number of months, and he went online and booked one to meet at a local hotel and was waiting for her. And then when the door went and he opened the door, it was his wife. So she was obviously furious.
Well, that's just a blue version of the Pina Colada song, isn't it, really?
Yes. But she was furious that he'd booked a prostitute, but he was furious that she was acting as one. So,
are you representing this as being something that actually happened?
No, it was in the paper, yeah, it was in the
It's got to be true,
then. Lexington.
It happened in Lexington.
Yeah, in the States.
Do you know the newspaper that I would most have liked to have worked for was the Sunday Sport? Going way back.
Some of those stories were unreal. Well, they were unreal.
Editor of the Sunday Sport then is... What's his name now? He does Drive on Radio.
Is it Tony Livesey?
Tony Livesey, yeah. And for some reason, I was invited to the launch party in Stringfellows of the Sunday Sport. And it was a real eye-popper because there were people there who were almost dressed. And I got chatting to him, and along with David O'Sullivan, who has gone on to even greater things in football. And I got talking to him and we just hit it off because he said, having meetings about what's going to be in paper, he said, is nothing like any other newspaper you've ever imagined, he said. What we do is, Friday lunchtime, about 11 o'clock, we go to a pub.
Yep.
There's about eight of us.
Yep.
And we write the entire newspaper. After about the second or third. In other words, it's like, you know, him meets Mike Ashley. And that's how they come up with things like, what were some of their headlines? We all know them. Because they were real.
Yeah.
Hitler's skull found on the beach in Hove is one.
Elvis living on the moon.
Elvis was living on the moon. Didn't they find a B-49 bomber on the moon? A double-decker bus that turned up at the North Pole? My all-time favourite, boy locked in refrigerator eats own foot. And they just would sit there and make up these stories.
And people would buy it.
Yes. But now, you see, here we are now, 20 years on from that. It's becoming more mainstream, isn't it? Just making stuff up and going, oh, well, as long as it's entertaining, nobody minds. And there's something in that, actually.
Within limits.
So do you, Ray, really believe that this man turned up having made that phone call and the woman it turns out he had bought was his wife? Do you really believe it? Or you want to believe
it? Well, the article ends because they obviously had a big Barney, so the adjoining room's called the police, and... So there's a possibility this is true, because now under very tough prostitution laws, he's in, they're saying he's in trouble from getting prosecuted because it's illegal to engage in any kind of sexual activity, even if it's with your own wife, because he was paying for it. So it could be true, because obviously they're saying he might go to court.
Mm. Mm. Well, certainly it's a good story, and you should never let the facts get in the way of a good story, should you, really?
Absolutely, yeah.
What is it they say at the end of... Have you ever seen a film called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance? It's a Western with John Wayne and... who's the big grizzly guy who's in The Dirty Dozen? Lee Marvin. And this guy gets to go to the Senate because he allegedly shot a guy in a gunfight, which he didn't. And then he reveals this to journalists right at the end, and the journalists tear up the story and they go, when truth meets fiction, print the fiction. That was 100 years ago, so what's changed? So anyway, Ray, it's a good story. Almost certainly not quite true, but great story, and thank you for that.
Okay, no worries, cheers.
Talk again. Shall we have another little programme trail and see whether it's something that we'd be able to broadcast today? These are little trails promoting programmes that were actually broadcast on a commercial radio station in this country called Talk Radio about 20 years ago. Has society and broadcasting and the media moved forward or backwards? But this, which we're about to hear, was an hour of radio back then.
This month sees Hong Kong go Chinese. And isn't China a fantastic friend?
I like Chinese. I like Chinese. They only come up to your knees. Yet they're always friendly and they're ready to please.
Today from 2 with me, Tommy Boyd, on Talk Radio. There's a good argument for a Rusnan.
Tommy Boyd. I can't believe
I can't believe I'm laughing at it.
I can't believe that went to air.
That's awful. That is awful, but funny.
I know. That's the thing, isn't it?
But there's so many different types of laughter. And what I'm laughing at is not the idea that Chinese people were ever like that. Of course they're not. I'm laughing at the fact that... what am I laughing at exactly? I'm laughing with embarrassment at myself for being like that, for agreeing to do that then. Mm. And I'm slightly laughing at us now for thinking that there's something absolutely disgraceful about that. First of all, look, the song in the middle, that's the...
That's a real song, isn't
that's
it?
That's Eric Idle Monty Python.
Oh.
Monty Python, the greatest comedy troupe of all time.
Well, blame him for half of it, then.
You know, Monty Python are, to comedy, what the Beatles were to music. They're the five greatest troupe of comedians who've ever been put together, on not just on the small screen, but on the big screen. And one of them split off and made the funniest sitcom of all time. Yeah. So these guys were huge, and yet they did that. Now, so my question is Eric Idle embarrassed or ashamed about that?
Possibly.
And would he say, well, back then it was...
It
was ironic.
Exactly. Well, if you think about back then, or no, early 70s, the Black and White Minstrels.
That was awful.
I mean, exactly.
That was awful.
I never got that.
No.
Why would you come up with an idea like that?
I'm just thinking it through. There are people who don't know what the Black and White Minstrel show was, and it was a light entertainment programme in which they sang. It was men and women.
On a Saturday night. It was a big show on a Saturday night.
The women were dressed in frocks always, and they tended to have parasols, and they were nice girls. But all the men wore striped blazers and pressed trousers and straw boaters and were blacked up.
Yeah. Why?
But was there something ironic about my delivery of the Chinese accent? Was I taking the mickey out of people who think that China... This would be my defence in court, that I was kind of taking the mickey out of people who think that Chinese people speak like that and can't say their L's and their R's. Slightly. That would be my defence. Would it work, Kath?
I don't know. I think at the moment we are more thoughtful or arguably more sensitive about stuff like that.
We don't want to hurt people.
No,
right?
No.
Would that have hurt a Chinese person?
Yes.
Then?
Yes.
Yes.
Probably.
Now?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you know what? It's probably just... It's not very clever, is it?
It's not. That's the other thing.
It's a bit too easy.
Yes. I don't remember that trail, but yeah, that was an easy laugh. There are such things as easy laughs, and boy, don't we go for them. Where should we go next? Well, I'm going to have a word with Ken in Newcastle because it's always good. How long do you think it will be before Ken mentions the Bible today? Kath, you're going for...
I reckon within the first 3 sentences.
Well, he will now because we provoked it, really. But he usually manages to pretend that he's not going to and then does. So, Ken?
Good evening, Tommy and Kath. Thank you for taking my call. Very kind of you. I was listening to you discussing the broadcasting situation in the country and how it had moved ahead. Well, I think it has moved ahead in one specific way, which has been very damaging to the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you think I would be thinking about?
17 seconds. Well done, Ken. That was quick.
Hi.
Very good. Very I was going to say 17 seconds.
I was going 25.
No, I had 17 seconds in my mind. I should have said it.
You say that now.
Well, I didn't want to provoke Ken into mentioning the Bible within 17 seconds just to pander up to me and see whether he might get another sentence in, which he's not going to because he's gone now. So... 17 seconds. Is that a record, Kath? You've heard Ken before on the radio.
I think he's come on singing before, but I may be wrong.
But 17 seconds before mentioning the Bible. That's good talk radio stuff, though. Yeah. You listen to talk radio around the world, and I do. I enjoy... Great thing about the internet now is you can listen to 17,000 radio stations, and I love listening to some of the American ones. And Kevin, spending 17 seconds before you mentioned the Bible... on some of the radio stations I listen to, Ken would be considered a considerable slouch.
The element of surprise.
Yeah, you just go straight in by saying, Exodus 4! They do, sometimes. Are there people who know the entire Bible so that if you quoted back to them Job 14, they wouldn't know that it wasn't?
Probably, yeah.
Is that a defence mechanism that's worth exploring?
No.
No. Who next? Jerry, who's calling from Crewe. Hey, Jerry.
Hello, I've got some more events to do. Most people having dogs.
Say again, but a bit more slowly.
I've got some more events to do. Most people having dogs.
About the homeless people having dogs?
Ah, yes, go ahead, yes. Yes.
You can get a bowl, serve them the food, have food, and have water in the bowl, to use a multi-purpose bowl.
Yes, certainly they should have water in the bowl. Very important point. Jerry, thank you for that. It is against the 1911 Captive Animals Act not to have provided sufficient appropriate water for animals. And if you see that an animal has not been provided with sufficient appropriate water, you're entitled to break into the premises and provide that for the animal.
People do that with dogs locked in cars, don't they?
Of course, and they're allowed to.
Good.
Quite right, too.
Yes.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Barry, who's in Weston-super-Mare. Barry.
Oh, hello, Tommy. I've enjoyed the show the last couple of evenings.
Thank you.
He sounded surprised.
He's being polite. Leave him, leave him, leave him.
Anyway, just a couple of things I've linked into. I'm sort of a little bit later than Kath. I'm the 25th of August born. I'll be 74 then. There was a few difficulties, I think, in relation to being in school. I was, I think, the youngest but one.
Poor lad. You were the runt, weren't you, as they used to say?
Yeah, the other thing, though, is you just touched on vegetarians. And I think the comments that you made, I've come across this, you know, you do find, I found in the early days that some veggies do try to out-veg others, but I find as you get older, it tends to mellow a bit. I think I was quite campaigning in the early years, and then you settle down. But I find most days now, Tommy, it's usually people who sort of ask me, you know, like sort of questions, why'd you go veggie, what were your reasons, what you eat, and so on. And I find a lot of people saying that they've considered it and things like that. But I reckon as you get older, you know, it sort of just becomes a way of life. And, you know, you sort of settle down with it.
I converted a woman once to vegetarianism. And we were getting on a train from Euston to Birmingham. And she suddenly disappeared and she came back with a McDonald's. And so I didn't know what to say. So I thought she lapsed or something. And we'd had a few drinks, but not an excessive amount. And she was halfway through this McDonald's hamburger when she suddenly looked at me and she went, oh, wait a minute. Aren't I a vegetarian?
And she'd only had a couple of drinks.
I'm a vegetarian. Oh, you should have said something. It's one vegetarian story. But see, I have a theory about why the majority of men who are vegetarians.
Go on.
For sex.
What?
For sex. And it's because an awful lot of women, young women, are much more idealistic about animal rights than men are. And you're in a nightclub or a crowded party and you see it, somebody suddenly takes your eye and you think, oh, what a wonderful human being. And you sidle over and you end up talking to them. And one of the first things that comes out is, well, I'm a vegetarian. And you know that a vegetarian, or you suspect, that a beautiful vegetarian woman is very unlikely to be interested in a carnivorous man. So you become a vegetarian.
So
right
am
there.
I.
Right yes. there. Yeah. Right there. But then you've got to live with it.
Yes.
Right. And then you become either an underhand carnivore or you become a true blue vegetarian. Which is something that happened to me, so I know what I'm talking about. What made you give up meat then, Barry, and why and when?
Yeah, I mean, it was about 35 years ago, I guess. I was doing a lot of distance running then, a lot of marathon running. I happened to go listen to a guy, Professor Birkett, who found the link between meat eating and bowel cancer. And, you know, obviously a lot younger and you start to sort of think about things a little bit. So I embraced it for selfish reasons, really. I started by cutting out meat for about 3 or 4 days. And then eventually I found, you know, that I wasn't particularly enjoying meat. And it was after, it was a while after I started to sort of consider more animal welfare and I become a little bit more sort of ethical in my reasons. Mm. I don't really have any regret about it, you know.
No,
I run every day, as I say, I'm 74.
I was going to ask you a bit about that. What's your best marathon time?
2:46.
That's not bad.
That's impressive.
And what would it be now? What could you cut now for the 26 miles at 74?
I stayed under 3 hours. The last marathon, I had sort of glandular fever in the 90s, so I left, but then I restarted. So these days, I do half marathons. I'm running half marathons at about 1:51.
That's not bad. You know what I always wanted to do? I always wanted to enter the London Marathon, because I could just about have kept up with the elite athletes until Tower Bridge. Just about. When I was in my peak, when I weighed nothing, when I weighed 9 stone 11...
Yeah, what time did you, what was your best time then?
Oh, well, the only full marathon I ever ran was the first ever London Marathon. And I was working for a radio station in London called LBC. And I had to carry a tape recorder around with me, ewer. And I was interviewing people on the run, which is my excuse for the fact that I didn't break 4 hours. In actual fact, I've looked at the placings. I was beaten by a 68-year-old woman, I was 28, and a 93-year-old man beat me home, which is fantastic.
What was your actual time?
Four hours, 20 minutes. Four hours?
Good.
Well, carrying a ewer.
Yeah, that's all right, Tommy. Yeah.
And interviewing people along the way.
I think that's quite impressive.
Do you know the funny thing I remember about the first ever London Marathon? They forgot that during a marathon, some men would have to go and have a wee. So there weren't any toilets provided. So they suddenly hit on this idea of put up a sign, if anybody needs to relieve themselves, this was about the halfway stage, they can go turn left here. So I turned left and we went into this knackered old car park and there were all these signs up around it, billboards, advertising billboards. So nobody could see in and see these men who were all having a pee simultaneously. So there were about 100 as I sort of jogged up and started my pee. But you know what was really amusing? When you've run half a marathon, you can't stop your legs going. Oh. So everybody was peeing.
Weeing off, running on the spot.
Jogging on the spot. I couldn't stop myself from doing it either.
That opens up another subject, actually. Weeing. Before marathons, you keep going before the start. Obviously, that's nerves. But I've only ever had it, then once you start running, you're fine. I only ever had it once where I needed to go. And I actually, because you're getting sponges along the way, so I thought, well, I'll just try and do it. But you can't. It's absolutely impossible to do it when you're running.
To pee and run?
I couldn't do it.
Oh, a lot of people do, though. A lot of the top marathon runners
wee
do.
Wee whilst they're running?
Yeah.
What, into the shorts?
Yeah.
No.
Yes, they do. Yes.
Well,
bring a journalist.
Don't you remember two words, Paula Radcliffe.
Paula Radcliffe. Yeah.
Well, I heard she did the other as well.
Yes, she did do the other.
Number two.
Yeah. Side of the road.
No one will ever know, will they? It's one of those things. She definitely did something. She wasn't crouching down there because she wasn't sure whether it was a sixpence or a shilling. she was definitely doing something. Barry, thank you for your call. Stay healthy.
Really nice talking to you.
And nice talking to you.
All the best to all of you there, and especially to you, Catherine. Look forward to talking to you again soon. It's been a pleasure, Tommy.
Bye-bye, Barry.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Evening. Half an hour left of it, and then it's morning. EU laws. Laws inspired by the bonkers lunatics in Brussels. One of the reasons why a great many people wanted to leave the EU is because newspapers were reporting that Brussels were creating some ridiculous laws which we sensible people in Britain were having to conform with. And they're all going to be repealed when we leave. And we'll be able to make our own laws and they'll all be sensible. This, along with the fact that immigration is not going to suddenly disappear, and that £360 million is not going to be made available every 20 minutes to the National Health Service instead of being sent to Brussels, The bit about EU laws being made, which are bonkers, are largely turning out to be entirely a false story. It was false news. For example, Nikki, way back, the EU banned shopkeepers, British shopkeepers, from selling eggs by the dozen. It was reported. It was a story. The EU said that we could not sell eggs by the dozen. But what was the true story?
No, that's not true. A quick look at any supermarket, obviously, will show you that eggs continue to be sold by the dozen and by the half dozen and in some shops even single eggs. So that is a load of old rubbish.
They got hold of the fact that eggs were going to be sold by weight, which is what every other foodstuff is, sold by weight. And yet, it got into the public consciousness that they were going to do it. But then I found myself thinking, how would you sell eggs by the five? Because the box is set up, isn't it, for even numbers. That's one of the flaws in the whole business of the decimal thing. Animals aren't decimal. We're not decimal. We are imperial beings.
Why can't you just have a round one?
We have
five.
Two of everything.
You can have five.
We have four of everything. We have
five.
Eight of everything.
You can
we
have five? Of course you can have five.
Are there any animals with 10 legs? How would you have five? What would a box of five eggs look like?
It'd be round. It'd be a round carton.
With four eggs surrounding one in the middle?
Yeah.
And how would you pack that? Think about how the...
Just the same.
No, it wouldn't. You can pack boxes of eggs.
Yes.
Can't you? End to end, side by side, and one on top of one another. So that they all fill that enormous lorry that reverses into the supermarket just when you want to go in there. Vehicle reversing. That one. That's full. If that's full of eggs, they're all packed perfectly. Now, if you've got round eggs, this is worth thinking through.
Yes.
So I think that they would not... The EU would never be selling eggs in fives because they would be very difficult to transport efficiently.
Well, you could just have a strip of five then.
We've all been abroad.
You can have a strip of five.
I was abroad last year. There were no eggs on sale for five. Why would the EU want to do that? But it passed into the public consciousness. What else are we talking about? Has radio moved forward or backwards in the last 20 years? It appears, but just by playing some snippets of some stuff that I used to do, not here, but on a radio station that this radio station sort of was spawned by, I think we've moved forward. And who is the most irritating person in Britain? We're gradually closing that hunt down.
Yeah, we have some good suggestions.
To the one
on that.
Individual who, well, Kath gets to make the final decision a little bit later on. Let's have a word with Stephen Ward, who's called the programme on his mobile. Evening, Stephen.
Evening, Tommy. I've thought of another person to add on your irritating list.
Okay.
The Go Compare Man.
On the adverts, yes.
Oh, the guy who sings?
Go Compare.
Yeah, that one.
Well, it was quite interesting because he went, didn't he, and then he thought, oh, he's had his day.
He sort of like... They took the mick out of him, then he'd gone, and then he'd come back, didn't they?
Yeah, he came back.
By popular demand.
Better than ever before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you see, it's worked, because you've remembered the product.
Yeah, I suppose from an advertising thing, it's a clever thing, but I still found him irritating.
I'll tell you one advertising campaign. I think we can talk about advertising campaigns without necessarily promoting the product.
Yeah.
And one of the things that annoys me is when I started in broadcasting... you were told that if you ever mentioned any brand name on air, you had to say that other brands are available.
People do it all the time.
As though if you said Kit Kat, people would go, oh, go and buy a Kit Kat. Quick, hang on. I'm going to go and disproportionately use my disposable income as a result of the subliminal mention of Kit Kat by the presenter when he could have said any other proprietary chocolate bar.
Like Mars bar.
Yes, yeah. Don't milk it. if I talk about the Vanarama ads, it's only because I'm interested in the psychology of how those ads were made, and it was one of the few examples when a real man in the street was considered not appropriate for selling something that a man in the street would buy, because the original the original Vanarama ads had a song, which was
Remember this advert.
When more veins off the right, I'm not working. So what am I going to do? Right. And that was you know, fine. That sort of voice is absolutely fine. It's a voice that you hear on the radio quite a lot. It's obviously very successful. But for whatever reason, the business behind Vanarama didn't want their vans to be seen in that way as being driven by the salt of the earth people that do often drive vans.
What van
so man? They changed it. And instead of this very amusing, I liked it. We're more vans off the road, I'm not working. Ray Winston again. Has been replaced by a chap who definitely does not drive a van.
No.
And he goes, when my van's off the road, I'm not working. So what am I going to do?
And, I've seen them on the TV.
I mean, if he was singing, like, if my Lexus is off the road, I'm not working.
A bit more believable.
So what? Yes. Anywho. Stephen, was that why you rang?
Yeah, that was why I rang.
And it's been a fine call. And in 20 years' time, we'll play it back and say, could we get away with this today? No, we will.
Yeah, that'd be good.
All right, bye. One of the things we don't do in this country is too much of, it happens occasionally, but it happens a lot in America, is that the person who's hosting the show has to do the commercial.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you'd love that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Love it. And they just drift into it seamlessly. There's one that I'm listening to on a New York radio station at the moment where the guy says that if you have any aches and pains, if you're waking up in pain, if you're finding it difficult to get out of bed in the morning, well, my producer used to be like that. But now he takes Rialkico. And Rialkico is a naturally occurring stimulant which oils the body using natural greases and animal, I don't know. It goes on like
that.
And
do they do voices and things? Or do they just do it
straight? No, they don't sing it. That would be good.
No, but if they did sort of like accents, you know, pretending to be different characters.
Oh, what? Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
that'd
I worked
be quite interesting.
I visited a radio station in Florida where one person was doing all of it, including doing the talk show like this.
Okay, we'll take some more calls right now. Who do we have on line one? Dave.
And then it would go into the news and he would read the news, but he'd read the news like this. Our top story today. Just change his voice and do the news and then go back and say, in just a moment, we're going to be back with more talk from Jerry.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, here we go.
Brilliant. I remember thinking,
was he the callers as well?
No, but I haven't actually heard it live, but legendarily there is a guy who does his own calls live. And he's got one of those throat boxes that you put on your throat like that and you press it up against your voice. So he doesn't have to change microphones or anything.
No.
You could do it. You could have a separate microphone in the studio that made your voice sound like a telephone thing. Mm. But he doesn't bother with that. He just holds this thing that looks a bit like an electric razor up against his voice. And he goes, OK, so we got Mike now on line four. Mike, what can I do for you? I'll tell you what I'll say, Dave Allen, we are Street 11. Thanks very much indeed for your call. That's a little bit too far. Brilliant. Love to do that as well.
Yeah. Does he have good arguments with himself?
He has fantastic arguments with himself.
Idea.
And I think he usually wins.
Mm. Like a woman.
EU laws, which have been imposed by bonkers Brussels. We'll do another one of those in just a moment. But let's return to one of our other themes today, which is, has broadcasting moved forward for the good or for the better? Let's agree that it's moved forward, but is that for the good or for the better over the last 20 years? And this is not really a talking point. It's an excuse, a naked excuse to play some trails from 20 years ago and make ourselves cringe. So let's grab another one.
Did you see our prisons are set to get their own radio stations?
Convict FM!
Need a snout? Short of batty? Visit Mad Jack McMahon all this week on the landing. The snout with Clark. Also available new snout lights. When ordering, remember to mention Convict FM.
Convict FM!
How can we make prisons more pleasant and comfortable for offenders? I'm Tommy Boyd. That's today from 2 on Talk Radio, with a full-size snooker table, a proper holiday, and a conjugal visit, whenever, on Talk Radio. That's a good argument for listening.
Ah, brilliant.
Now, you see, that, I think, was a trigger to talk about the nature of prison, the whole, you know, penal system.
Yeah.
And the whole notion of prison and imprisonment.
Snout with a clout.
But in journalism, if you can call it that, you're always looking for what's called a peg. So the peg was, I think, that we noticed that they were doing a, what do they call those enclosed FM broadcasts, where you broadcast within an area of 3 miles or something. You can get a short license.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah.
So a radio, prison was getting one of those, and it was in the newspapers. So we thought, OK, well, talking about, you know, what to do with people who've been convicted of crimes is a good topic, solid topic, but we were stuck in this trench, really, of always trying to make it appear funny, because that's going to lure people to listen to what could turn out to be an intelligent program. But that one made me laugh.
That did make me laugh very loudly.
Is it indulgent to hear it once again, just to, is that possible? Good.
Did you see our prisons are set to get their own radio stations?
Convict FM.
Need a snout? Short of batty? Visit Mad Jack McMad all this week on the landing. The snout with Clark. Also available new snout lights. When ordering, remember to mention Convict FM.
Convict FM.
How can we make prisons more pleasant and comfortable for offenders? I'm Tommy Boyd. That's today from 2 on Talk Radio, with a full-size snooker table, a proper holiday, and a conjugal visit. Whenever on Talk Radio. That's a good argument for listening.
Yeah, see, also, it was a bit of a red rag to a bull, suggesting that prisons should be made more comfortable. Even more comfortable.
Can they get any more comfortable?
Well, the thrust of the programme was that you were inviting people who had strong views in certain areas, and you, as the host, would have an argument with them. And most of the audience knew that they would never phone in, because they would never put themselves in that vulnerable position of having been lured into phoning a phone-in programme to say that prisons are too comfy. It's too obvious. But people did.
Yeah.
And so the argument was had, and the audience actually never rang in. In fact, when a chap took the radio station over, a man called Mackenzie, he called me in on day one, and he said, "Don't be rude to the listeners." And I said, "I'm not rude to the listeners. I'm rude to the callers." He said, "It was the same thing." I said, "No, it's not the same thing. If you go and see a stage hypnotist and you volunteer to go up on the stage and he makes you act like a chicken, right?
That's your choice, isn't
it? The audience finds
it
funny.
You've made that decision.
But you've decided, yeah,
exactly.
And the audience hope that somebody's going to volunteer, preferably a vicar or a posh-looking lady, goes up on stage and is then made to look ridiculous.
Okay? That was their choice. And like you're saying, so a caller chooses to ring in.
So that was the basis of the whole thing. But was that cruel? Because
the
programme was deliberately trying to get people...
No.
Do you know what we did one day, which was we did an entire 15-minute setup, a monologue about gardening. But about halfway through it, I paused, leaned into the microphone. I was talking about hydrangeas. I was saying, why are hydrangeas necessarily only red or blue? I was doing that. And then I paused and said something, and the phone lines lit up. All I went was, so why is it that hydrangeas appear always to be blue or red? Fox hunting. Because it seems to me that they're... we did an hour on fox hunting. You just have to say it. Fox hunting. So, naughty? Wrong?
No. Definitely not.
You definitely need to debate something like that. Kath, naughty but wrong. Naughty but wrong?
The thing is, it's that thing again of, are you punching up or punching down?
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes.
Prisoners,
yes.
I think,
no, because
are fair game. Because
exactly.
Most people, they're fair game. But I think there is a really interesting debate to be had that you're floating over the top there, which is this assumption that prisons are so much easier than actually they possibly are. And you want that golden call, don't you, from the convict who's been in, just got outside, and he can tell you exactly what it's like.
Yes.
And that you don't get a PlayStation, and that you're left for too long without anything to do, and that you're expected to reintegrate afterwards after being dehumanised.
You've gone right to the heart of it. Funnily enough... Do you know who was the most enthusiastic listener to that type of radio that I was doing at the time? It was a man, and I expect you know who he is, and he goes by the name of Charles Bronson.
Yes.
And his real name is Peter, and he is Britain's longest-serving convict. He's been inside now for I don't know how many years.
Quite notorious,
He used to do me drawings every day. Mysterious drawings, but very, very carefully done drawings in wax crayons.
And he'd send one to you every day?
Every day. He had wax crayons because he wasn't allowed anything sharp.
And what sort of drawings were they?
Well, very, very disturbed. Mickey Peters, that was his name. Probably still, well, it still is his name.
Yeah.
He was huge. He did 1,000 press-ups every day. And he was a seven-man, I forget the term, seven-man lock-in, something like that, which meant that if anybody was going into his cell, there had to be seven of
people,
them.
Yeah.
And they had to be armed, because Mickey sometimes was nice as pie and sometimes wasn't. And he said to me about 6 weeks before I got the sack from that place the second time, he said to me, "Watch out, Tommy," he said, "because I feel it in the air that they're coming closer." And I toyed with going to meet him, but then I thought, well, that's a little bit Fred Dinage and the Craze, isn't it?
Mm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so
how
we're talking
about
radio, and has it moved forward, and have we moved forward as a people? But that's just an excuse for playing some funny trails, really. Irritating people, in about half an hour's time, we're going to have our nomination for the most irritating celebrity in the UK at the moment. And we're also kicking around those laws that the bonkers of Brussels are supposed to have passed and imposed on us sensible Brits, which looks as though the repealing of those laws is going to be about all the Brexiteers are going to get, at least for the next 2 or 3 years. We've got Sam's pressing the buttons. We've got Kath you'll talk to if you call the programme. It's Nikki and Tom in the studio for Ian Lee, and this is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd
on Talk Radio.
Just listening there to that Paul Ross trail, which was brilliant. Does anybody else sort of like Gilbert and Sullivan or Jum?
No.
No?
Not for me.
Kath, no. Sam, no. It's actually quite funny. It is very funny and very catchy. I didn't think I'd like it. But I got hooked up in one called that. I'm not sure which Gilbert and Sullivan that one comes from. I am the very model of a model in general. But there's one called HMS Pinafore.
Yeah.
And it's about the corruption within the Royal Navy. And did you ever see Indiana Jones, the first one?
Yes.
There's a moment where this guy celebrates their decision to try and get into the tomb. He goes, "I am the monarch of the sea." I don't know if you remember that moment. But that is a song from the said opera, and there's a great line in it, because this guy is the arch admiral of the Royal Navy, but he's a little sort of twerp, and he sings "I am the monarch of the sea, the ruler of the Queen's Navy," and he goes through his career, and he started out with a law firm, and then he got into Parliament, and he talks about how corrupt the law was and how corrupt Parliament is. Then he comes out with this fantastic line, and this was 150 years ago. He goes, what is it? Let me just see if I can do it. "I learned one thing from the Ipswich witch. If you want to win a vote, scratch a bigot's itch." There's two things there. Do you know who the Ipswich witch was?
No.
She was the last witch burned at the stake in this country.
Right.
Haven't women had a bad time of it generally, really?
Yeah. Oh, goodness, if I come back, I'm coming back as a man or a dog.
Well, I think it's interesting you say that. I think I would like to have one last go, and I think I would like to come back as a woman, if
would
I haven't
you?
Already been one.
Oof.
Just to find out for sure.
Trust me, you get away lightly. In so many ways. Don't you agree?
I suspect it's the case.
So many ways. I mean, all the things our bodies have to go through as a woman. And ageing, for instance.
Mm.
A man just gets better with age. They get a bit of grey in their hair. They look fantastic. Their bodies don't go, apart from the little paunch, which you can do something about. Us, if we get grey hair, we look like an old hag. We get cellulite. You get bingo wings. You get everything. I mean, that's just tip of the iceberg. You wouldn't want to come back as a woman.
Going back 20 years at Talk Radio, I did a programme which was, what's worse, the menopause or going bald? Okay. And again, it was a tool which enabled us to actually have what was actually quite a serious conversation about the differences between the genders as much as anything else. But the head of sales took the managing director out to lunch that day and said it was disgraceful that we were doing broadcasting like this. Because
Why?
It was going to be very difficult to sell advertising to things around programming that was so trivial and ridiculous.
It's not trivial. The menopause is not trivial.
There's that. The fact that genders, our two gender, or two of our gender, have different, well, no, it's 2017, have different things to deal with. But this was what the really interesting thing about that discussion over lunch, whether I should be sacked for doing such trivial nonsense. It gradually emerged that the two of them had differing views about what was worse, going bald or having periods, okay? And so that took over their lunch. They then found themselves doing what we were trying to do on the radio, these two guys. What's worse, going bald or having periods? And then it went to an even higher plane. It turned out that the reason that the head of sales didn't like this topic was because he was bald.
There you go.
And actually, baldness is male pattern baldness is a bit worse than most women realise.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, you're okay because you've got a beautiful head of hair, haven't you?
I know. And I'm so pleased about that. I'd rather have a full head of hair than be rich, than be able to run a 4-minute mile.
But there's a lot of bald men that are very attractive. I don't think it's a problem.
It's you don't understand. You don't understand the problem. You think it's just got to do with us looking good for women.
Well, what is it then?
Kath, do you know why male pattern baldness is a little bit worse than most women realise?
It's a reminder that you're getting old. And
no, because there's younger. No, that is there's it. A lot of younger men with bald heads.
That is it.
It's, no.
Yes. You're going to die. You realise that you're getting old. At 23, you get either two little avenues above your temples or, and this one probably is even worse, you get that patch, that monk's patch beginning there.
It's called the monkey.
Yeah. Look what happened to Wayne Rooney when he started to lose his hair. He lost his game. There are stories that England were late out coming onto the pitch for an important international because Wayne wasn't there and they went looking for him. And, oh, Wayne was in the toilets.
Not sobbing about his hair.
No, trimming his hair with a pair of nail scissors to try and make it look as though he wasn't going bald.
I don't believe that.
Oh, you can Google that one. That is a fact.
Really?
Yeah. It's an intimation of...
Do you think that it is a big problem then for men?
Yes.
When they're young and they're going bald?
Yes, it's an intimation of your mortality. I mean, I
have friends who've gone bald early and it's really, you know, it's upsetting. And another thing about it is they don't feel like they can admit that it's getting to them because that's a weakness as well.
That's a weakness as well. You must pretend that you're not bothered. What happened to me was my dad was what we used to call a Bilko. I don't know if you ever... Sergeant Bilko, famous American sitcom. And the main performer was a man called Phil Silvers.
So he had the hair.
He was completely, you know, chrome dome, but he had that ring of quite rich hair.
Mm. At the side, either side.
And that was my dad. And he told me that he was bald by the time he was 29.
So did you panic?
I took it on board. And then what happens to... I'll ask Sam about this. Sam, do you mind talking about male pattern baldness? What age are you?
25.
25, and?
It is starting to recede, so hence why I go for the push it over to the side to sort of cover it up a little bit.
Where is it starting to recede?
It's just at the front on the right is more so than anywhere else.
Well, I've got good news for you about that one, because those two avenues, they do always, in young men, march from age about 22 to 25. And then generally speaking... they stop.
I hope so. I got my fingers crossed.
Both of my sons have spent a lot of their time just looking at me and photographs of my dad and photographs of my wife's dad. And it's very important. And they just want to keep that head of hair. We do, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the same. I've seen my dad and
you check
granddad
it,
and it's, worrying.
It is.
How much hair have they got?
None.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not looking good.
You see, I think I would, if I went bald, what I would do is I wouldn't wear a piece.
Oh, no.
But I would consider shaving it all off and wearing a full wig. Why is that funny? Why is that funny?
What do you think of the hair transplants? Because I think they're actually pretty
they're
good.
They're brilliant. I mean, that Wayne Rooney one is fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, but where did he get the hair from?
I don't know. I don't want to think about that.
Anybody want to have a guess?
I
could think...
I think it was donated by an Eastern European.
I think it's from somewhere else on your body.
I do.
Where?
You know, where? Further along your head.
Oh, no, I'm thinking...
No, because it's a different texture. That wouldn't work, would it?
Of course it's not. He hasn't... He's got a full A full flap, a dinner plate, saucer plate sized flap of hair that wasn't there before his hair transplant. That can't have come from elsewhere on his body.
I think they farm it gradually.
Farm it?
Yeah.
What, take pieces out? Well, it's not going to grow back if you take a plug. You take a plug, it's not going to grow back. I saw a well-known comedian after he'd had a plug job that didn't work.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and there's no going back on it. You can't de-plug.
There's more to this, isn't there? Yeah. You don't need to worry anyway.
No, I don't. Although I was once given a bald cap for a part. Well, my head, obviously.
Yeah.
Where else would you want a bald part?
What does it look like? Did you look really...
When I was bald, it turns out that I've got a huge head.
Ah.
And it is a big head.
Yeah.
I'm an X. Elsewhere, my body is L, but my head is XXL.
It is interesting with your head shape, because my sister, bless her, had cancer, and she had the chemo and her hair fell out, so I had to shave what was left off. And underneath, you know, she had a beautiful shaped head, but she was so paranoid about it. But it's so different when you lose your hair. Mm. Completely changes you.
Mm.
And that's hard for a woman.
We'll take the news at midnight, and we're getting ever closer to identifying the most irritating celebrity in the United Kingdom. We're also having fun pretending that we're talking about developments in radio and what can and can't be broadcast, but we're being absolutely honest about it. It's also a good opportunity. No, it's mainly an opportunity to play some funny trails from 20 years ago and either ridicule them or simply allow them to be... To make us laugh. And we're also talking about EUs and some of the EU laws which were allegedly passed by bonkers Brussels, which got an awful lot of people in this country thinking that we were being taken over. Not by evil people, but by mad people. So we've just got a minute or so before the news. So, Nikki, let's just do another one of them. I remember this one. A bonkers EU copyright proposal making it illegal to post photos of the London Eye and the Angel of the North.
And again... That wasn't true. They were advocating only that commercial use of such images should be subject to copyright. So the full EU Parliament actually rejected that idea. The European Commission never proposed it, and member states did not discuss it.
No, but it was out there as being another one of these bonkers laws.
Bonkers, and it wasn't true.
Okay. Who are you voting? Who do you think Kath is going to nominate as the most irritating UK personality?
Ooh, I would hope that she would go for someone like... Nicola Sturgeon.
No, I think she's going to be polite to me because she knows who I think is the most.
It's one of two chefs then, if it's one of yours.
It's one of two chefs. I think she's going to go. I'm heaping a little bit of pressure
on
her.
You are, aren't you?
But we will see. We'll get round to that right after the 12 o'clock news, which is next.
Talk Radio.
A couple of quick tweets. Pat tweets, Michael McIntyre, irritating. Boom, boom, more annoying than chopping chilies before going for a wee. True. And Andy... tweets, and I like this one, Shearer, worth every penny. New.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Tommy Boyd radio experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
20 years ago, there was a commercial radio station in Britain called Talk Radio. And in 2017, there's a radio station in Britain called Talk Radio. And there's quite a lot of genetic code that's been exchanged between the two operations. So what we're doing is playing some of the trails which were made to promote whole hours of discussion and broadcasting 20 years ago. And the fact is that they're funny on so many different levels. They make you laugh because, in a sense, it's legitimate humour. But they also make you laugh because you think to yourself, how could people have made radio programmes like that in all seriousness?
What time of day were these going? I mean,
your show. 2 till 4 in the afternoon.
2 till 4 in the afternoon.
What Larkin referred to as the hollow of the afternoon.
Oh.
Or what Jean-Paul Sartre said. He said this. The afternoon, he said. It's both... too late for anything and too early for anything.
Good line.
Which I like.
Yeah.
So we did that. We got away with that most of the time in the afternoon because nobody else could think of anything to do in the afternoon. And at one point, the Radio Authority, which is now Ofcom, had somebody from Talk Radio visit, and they went past a room where there were seven people sitting in the room typing. It was girls, women, because that's what women used to do. And they were typing, and he said, what goes on in there? And they said, that is the room where we process all the complaints about the afternoon programme on Talk Radio.
No.
That's what I was told. It might have been a
complete... That's your claim to fame.
Infame.
You're proud of it.
I like what John McEnroe said when they said to him, if there'd been Hawkeye in your day, what difference would it have made to your career? And he said, I would have suffered by it. I'd have been 20% more successful, but 40% less infamous. He's such a good broadcaster. Everything he comes out with is as good a soundbite as his forehand was.
Unlike Boris Becker.
Yeah, poor Boris. Mm. But he's always been fixated with money.
Yeah.
I first spoke to Boris. He was a 16-year-old kid sitting on the steps of the Queen's grandstand.
So was that the 2 weeks before he won at Wimbledon?
Yes, yeah. It was.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was sitting there, and he looked like a vulnerable kid, even though he was 6'4" and dazzlingly blonde and very competitive. And I sat down next to him, and I just said, can I ask you a question? I said, why do you play tennis with a metal wristwatch on? And he went, I am paid £30,000 every year to... This is a 16-year-old boy. Oh. I am paid £30,000 each year to wear this watch when I play tennis. End of argument,
yep,
wasn't it?
Absolutely.
But then he quite liked the idea of having arguments with me, so he followed me around. And I went back into the bar where a test match had just started. And he came up and stood next to me, and he wanted to get me again. So he went, cricket, what a stupid game it is you English people play. Can you explain this game to me? And I said, well,
you were on a losing wicket there,
yeah,
weren't you?
Well, yeah, exactly. And then about 10 years later, when I was working there in the press tent, we got given strange jobs. And the strangest job I've definitely been given there, apart from one I can't tell you about, was I was told to look after Boris Becker's girlfriend all day. Make sure nobody from the press speaks to her. But don't let her know that you're doing this.
Oh.
So I had to pretend to be somebody who was just butlering for her and getting her drinks and making sure she was all right because Boris was off playing tennis. But what I was really doing was make sure that nobody could get to her and get a quote from her. What's her telephone number again?
Yeah, give us a call. 0344-499-1000.
Okay. We've got Nigel, who's called from Maidstone, who we'll take in just a second. Or is he there? Hey, Nigel.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
How am I? Pleasantly tired.
Yeah.
How's that? Yeah?
Having a good show.
I think it's about 8.5, I would say.
You tell us. What do you think?
You sound different tonight, Ian. Have you got a bad throat? Because you sound different.
I'm trying out a new personality. Is it
I
working?
I haven't been listening to the show. Is that not Ian, then?
No, it's Tommy Boyd.
Go with it, Nigel. Go with it. Go with it. Stay with that one, mate. Let me explore
Tommy
the possibility.
Boyd, fantastic. I've never spoken to you before, have I? I don't think.
Oh, yes, you have.
Well, it must have been about 15 years ago.
I think it was 2002.
Was it?
Oh. 3:15, if I remember rightly. Or maybe you're not the guy with the hernia.
No, I've never spoken to you, Tom. I've always listened to you on the show on Talk Sport years ago.
Okay, cool. That's cool.
And I really like the way you...
I really wish
shows.
You'd gone with the idea that I had a funny voice and I was Ian Lee.
No, just I thought you was Ian Lee with a bit of a cold.
Well, then you should have stuck with it, because there's a lot of mileage in that, but now you've blown it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could have really run with that ball. Pick that ball up and run with it, mate.
With Mike Mendoza. Do you know Mike Mendoza very well?
I'm not going to say I know him very well. Why?
Do you meet him at the studio? Do you cross paths and things?
Why?
I just thought you might meet all the other presenters as you work in the studio.
It is a misconception that a great many people have that there is this tight fraternity of broadcasters.
Yeah, do you know Ian Lee quite well as well?
I'm proud to say yes. I think I can say yes.
Did you hear the records we made together? The comedy ones. The ones that were sold in the charts.
I can't say I have, no.
Lindsay Lohan and Miley Stylus.
Yes.
there was a video out as well, but he put it all together. I wrote some of it and made some of it up, and he put the rest together.
Blended.
It was fantastic. Yeah, I've never had anything on iTunes before, or in the dance charts as well. Mm. It went into.
I still rather you thought I was Ian Lee.
Yeah.
Could we have a conversation? Do the conversation again, and only this time stay with me being Ian Lee. Can you remember how you started it?
Yeah. All right. How are you tonight, Ian?
Okay. All right. No. Well, I'll do it properly. I'll introduce you.
Yeah.
All right. So I think our next caller is Nigel in Maidstone. Is he there? Oh yeah. Okay. Hi, Nigel.
Oh, hi, Ian. How are you?
No,
tonight?
You didn't say that. Come on, you were there only 2 minutes ago. You didn't say that.
Oh, I didn't.
You asked me how I was.
Yeah. How are you, Ian?
I'm pleasantly tired, thank you very much indeed, Nigel.
Have you been doing very much busy? Have you had a busy day?
No, you didn't do that. You didn't say that.
You
asked me if I had a sore throat.
You don't sound yourself.
Yeah. You don't sound yourself, Ian.
I did ring up to ask if you've seen my latest videos on the TalkSport, the golden years.
And moving on. Thank you very much indeed, Nigel, for what could have been...
Good radio.
That was so good and so funny and in such poor taste that we could have put it in one of those time capsules back then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if you could send stuff back and that would have worked perfectly well 20 years ago? Let's get another one of these trials, shall we?
Problem. How to A, accommodate a growing population of pensioners in Britain, and B, simultaneously, equip the nation against the threat of international conflict. Solution? Call up the elderly.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler?
Have them do their national service all over again. I'm Tommy Boyd, today from 2, with a hydraulic stairlift, regulation issue incontinence pads, a one-way domino club bus to Baghdad on Talk Radio. There's a good argument for listening. Attention! Deficit disorder!
How did you get that on air?
I'm laughing at the danger that we're posing ourselves by playing these. And this was on national radio 20 years ago.
I can't believe that you got away with that.
That's awful. And it's making me laugh. I promise, dear listener, out of embarrassment.
Or is it? I mean, you know, who's Frankie Boyle? Who likes Frankie Boyle? That's nowhere near what Frankie Boyle does, is there? Is it? And Frankie Boyle's got a national TV show. It's on at 11 o'clock at night. That's one of the things about radio. We don't have a watershed. If we had a watershed...
I think this is a good time of night to get away with stuff like this.
Why haven't we got a watershed?
You were doing your show in the middle of the afternoon.
In the middle of the afternoon when nobody could think of anything else to do and all the executives were having long lunches. So nobody was listening, frankly.
There was a lot of stereotyping going on there.
There was. I'm just trying to think back. Was it that the domino? I didn't get the domino bus to Baghdad thing. That was obviously something that was around at the time. Some sort of domino pass that you could get if you were
No, I didn't get that.
Of a certain age. But attention deficit disorder.
An incontinence pad.
Oh, I missed those. Incontinence pad. That's cruel.
That is.
That's punching down.
Yeah.
Kath.
You see, you've done it again. But.
Oh.
But. Voice of reason.
The scenario is so ridiculous that it's quite obvious that you're only joking.
Yes. Now, that's a really important defence. Humour is a minefield, isn't it?
Yeah.
What one person thinks is funny, another one won't. So.
But, I mean, you're quite obviously not proposing that we send old people back to national service.
Can I ask, have you ever found yourself in the guise of... presumably only for a short term, but nevertheless it's very instructive, compliance officer for a radio station?
I've had to sit in and, I've had to do snoop tapes and things like that.
Yes. The compliance officer at Talk Radio became... he was a sort of poacher-turned-gamekeeper. He joined the radio authority. He had so much to do. He spent so much time talking with them. They said, Martin, would you like to come? He's a very interesting man, actually, Martin Campbell, because... when he was a journalist and he became compliance officer at Talk Radio, which meant he had to write the explanations and the...
Defence,
yeah, of some of the stuff that we did. It was hard work. But there used to be a boxer called, this is ridiculous. Muhammad Ali, okay, was coming over to fight a British boxer whose name was Richard Dunn.
Okay.
And he was a huge 6'6" lorry driver by trade, but he was a bruiser. And Martin went to interview him. And he said to him, you know, what are the difficulties of fighting Muhammad Ali? He said, well, he said, the main problem, he said, I can't get anybody, a sparring partner, to box like Muhammad Ali. And Martin, who was quite a big lad himself, he said, no, he said, I bet you can't, he said, because he sort of boxes a bit like this, doesn't he? And Martin got up on his toes and did a little shimmy and started, you know, going from one side to the other. And this is a true story. Richard Dunn said, that's fantastic. He said, could you strip down your shorts and we'll do it? And he did it. And Martin Campbell, compliance officer for Talk Radio, and later bigwig at the Radio Authority, was Richard Dunn's main sparring partner in preparation for a world heavyweight title fight against Muhammad Ali, which, not surprisingly,
he lost.
Well, no, I will use what lawyers say. Lawyers never lose.
Okay.
They simply do not win. You get a lawyer, a letter from your lawyer, yeah. It never says we lost. No. It always says we did not win. So, Kath, I like your defence. I like your compliance work there. It's very clear that that can't be serious.
Mm. And again, you know, I think they would take into consideration the character of the show.
Mm.
I think maybe the attention deficit disorder thing is another one of those low blow things.
Yeah, it is actually, but it made us laugh, not because it's funny, it made us laugh because it was probably crossed the line.
Yeah.
And you do laugh when somebody crosses the line. We laugh at school if a kid crosses the line with the teacher. That gets us going,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, because isn't there an element of fear in laughter?
Yes, definitely. And also, and I've had this argument and I've never, ever won it with people, but I do believe there's an element of bullying in most humour.
Mm.
Because you look at a lot of comedians on stage and they really are. They've got their thumbs hooked into their belt and they're giving it.
Yeah.
They're giving it to the men and they're going, I'm better than you because I'm up here and you're not. And your missus, she's looking at me and she's thinking, I wish my husband was that funny.
Mm.
And I think that's the deal with an awful lot of stand-up comedy. Not just the old-fashioned chicken in a basket, but some of the so-called modern alternative people as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Have you got any closer at all to the most irritating celebrity in the United Kingdom?
I'm in a quandary because one name keeps coming up time and time again, but I think she's in a different category.
Ooh, she's gone she. That's a little clue.
You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about. Shall I say?
Yeah.
Katie Hopkins.
Yeah.
I have some sympathy for her because I think that she is painting herself into a corner. Mm. I've done that myself, so... Not with those sorts of views at all. I don't have views like that.
Some of the things she comes out with, you can think, yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah. She keeps crossing the line.
Yeah.
Once you've crossed the line, people are disappointed if next week you haven't crossed the line.
I think she's doing it deliberately half the time for airtime.
Well, this is the thing, and now she's going further and further each time.
Mm.
You know, if you're going to be kind about it, that's the thing. She's playing chicken with herself.
Mm.
But she is quite influential for some people.
I think...
That's the problem.
One of the key... and that's why it's not irritating.
Yeah. Mm. There's irritating, something else, isn't there?
Irritating people have to be trivial and, you know, unimportant. Mm. Like me. I'm capable of being very irritating, but I'm not going to change anybody's life for the better or for the worse. I don't want to. You know, I just want to be sort of vaguely...
Impressionable people might go, oh, yeah, she's got a point, hasn't she?
Mm.
So, there's another person then.
Go on.
Farage.
I quite like him. I just like he's so down to earth.
I mean, he could play higher or lower, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Is he more so than Piers Morgan? Is he?
Oh, don't you knock my Piers Morgan.
Well, exactly.
I'm not having a bad word said about my Piers
Morgan.
You
like that. I mean,
I love Piers,
Piers Morgan is a bit of a pantomime baddie, isn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes some really good, valid points.
But he's mostly an entertainer, whereas Farage and Hopkins have crossed a line, haven't they?
Mm. I don't find Farage irritating, though.
What I find refreshing, I do find refreshing about Nigel Farage is that they are trying to be honest sometimes.
That's it. That's what I like. And I remember, like honesty.
Yeah, I remember one morning when I saw him being interviewed by a BBC studio news presenter. They'd got Farage there. He'd agreed to do the show. Something had happened that had embarrassed him enormously. It was going to... journalist hoped that Farage was going to be embarrassed and wriggle and cringing, try to wriggle out of it and would try to explain it away. And so he just began by going, "Oh, Mr. Farage, you must be really embarrassed this morning." And Farage just went, "Yeah."
Great.
Do you know, that is such a clever way.
Yes, it's clever.
Just you burst a balloon. We, you know, obviously in local radio, you do a lot of holding to account of politicians, local politicians. And it's very rare that you get one that says, "Yeah, do you know what? We made a mistake. We'll sort it out." Mm. Or, "I don't know the answer to that, but I'll find out and come back to you."
Mm.
Instead, they wind themselves up.
Mm. Yep. They dig into themselves knots, deeper, don't they? Yeah.
But it's very clever and quite charming, actually, to mm-hmm. say, "Do you know what? Yeah, I'm muffed up."
Well, all Michael Howard had to do was to say, I think he should have said, "Do you know, I can't be certain, I'll get back to you on that."
Yeah.
Certainly he could have said, "Yes, I did, and that was a mistake." And that would have meant that Jeremy Paxman wouldn't have asked him how many times if he'd threatened to sack the governor? So 10, 12, 13?
I think about 10.
Times like that? But I think Howard was also enjoying exercising his unquestionable intelligence. He's a bright person, like him or not. And yes, he has something of a knight about him. And worse, I think Anne Widdecombe was actually being polite when she said he's got something of a knight about him. But I think he was enjoying, and I think very intelligent people do, I think he was just enjoying exercising his intelligence over Jeremy Paxman and simply not giving way because he doesn't like Jeremy Paxman.
Mm. It's and sport, isn't it?
Dennis Healy used to give the best interview with Jeremy Paxman. Do you remember Dennis Healy?
Yes,
at
I
all?
Do.
Dennis
yes.
Healy, what he used to do was this. Because he was cute, and he had an eye line for the monitor. So Paxman would ask him what he thought was a leading question, and Healy would reply to it. And then when Healy knew that the camera was on Paxman, he started giving him the V's up sign like that, and sticking his tongue out and going. And then Paxman would finish his next question and Healy would go straight back into serious mode and he would answer it like that. And Paxman knew what was coming because as soon as it went, like that. Very funny man, Dennis Healy. Right, where have we got to? We are getting closer to nominating, if you care. And you probably do slightly, but not enormously. But we're going to do it anyway. The most irritating person in the United Kingdom. We're kicking around some of the EU laws, which newspapers published had been made by bonkers Brussels, only they never were. It looks to those who are Brexiting that about all they're going to get out of Brexit, at least for the next couple of years, is that we're going to be able to sell straight cucumbers and bent bananas in our shops. But it turns out that none of those laws were ever passed by the EU. It was, going back 10, 20, 30 years, fake news. I'm Tommy, in for Ian. Nikki is here as well. Kath is running things the other side of the glass screen and Sam is pressing the buttons. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy
Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Another EU law which annoyed people, and it was in the papers, and made people think that Brussels is balmy and bonkers and they're passing all sorts of laws which British politicians would never pass, is that vacuum cleaners with powerful motors are to be binned after an EU law. And what's the truth in that one?
Well, it's misleading because the new rules banned energy-guzzling vacuum cleaners that waste energy and lead to unnecessarily high electricity bills, not ones with powerful suction. Nothing had to be binned. Vacuum cleaners already in the home can continue to be used and those already in the shops can still be sold. So very misleading.
Mm. I've started to enjoy vacuuming.
I love it.
Do you?
Oh, I've loved it for years. At one point, I had about four in the house.
Ah, so you had them strategically placed.
Yes.
So you didn't have to
one
keep
for
moving
stairs,
one.
One for downstairs.
Really?
Oh, well, I was in a three-storey house at the time. So
what an interesting strategy, I must say.
Yeah.
I've thought about having an upstairs one and a downstairs one.
But these cordless ones are just heaven.
Aren't they brilliant?
Oh, I love
them. It was the plugging in
and
the realising that you couldn't get any further with the...
Very frustrating.
With the
cordless
flex.
Cordless is great.
It is great. The one that I've got looks like a cross between a metal detector and a minesweeper.
Mm.
And it's great fun because you almost feel Star Wars-y with it. Because instead of a switch, it's got a trigger.
Yes, that's
so
my...
So you feel as though you're doing something military with it. And I take that dust. Do you have a Hoover, Sam?
Of course I have a Hoover.
You do? You Hoover?
Yeah.
You Hoover?
Yes, that's a blue job is what we call it at home.
Oh, you... Oh, with a Theresa May type sort of duties.
Yeah, well,
who does the dustbins?
Dustbins me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who does the shopping, the food shopping? That's a pink one,
well,
isn't it?
It is, but I have... The thing is, that's the sort of thing that I try and interject in that and I just get told to go away.
Yeah,
and...
because when men go food shopping, they spend double the amount of food because they go, oh...
No, I wouldn't do that.
A packet of food, that packet of biscuits, oh, I want those, a bar of chocolate.
No, I'm very stingy.
Really?
I'm like, why get the real ones when they're the same ones but value there?
Value.
Much better. It's the same thing.
I spend more in the supermarket than I intended to.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have to queue up for a long time at the till. So if there's two people or more at each of the tills, I go round again.
Why don't you just get the thing where you scan it yourself and you don't have to wait for anybody? You just go and pay.
Because of what happened to Anthony Worrell Thompson. I'm not joking. That's the reason I don't do it.
Really?
Yes, I don't. I get paranoid.
I do get paranoid. The odd occasion when they do stop, you know, they say, right, we have to just check you have got everything paid for. And you think, oh, my God,
really?
What if I haven't?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be embarrassing, but it's very unlikely. I mean, that was slightly different, I think.
I know, but I get paranoid when I walk out of any shop and a thing goes, bing, bing. And I don't know whether to carry on walking or to turn around and go, well, it can't be me because... And then I go, it can't be me because I've paid, it's on my debit card, I've got the bill, and not only that, it must be on CCTV cameras that I've actually paid for everything I'm walking out of the shop with. But
it's
I'm just a normal paranoid person.
Yeah, it's like when you go through customs, I always get a really guilty look on my face.
Have you ever been stopped?
No, I haven't. But I always have that sort of slightly nervous sort of smile. And I'm thinking, they're going to stop me because I look so guilty.
I was flying back from Amsterdam and my luggage went to Reykjavik. So I had to go back to Heathrow 24 hours later to collect my luggage, which had come in from Reykjavik. But it was recorded that it also originated from Amsterdam. And I got stopped and I got... totally body searched and the whole thing.
Not totally body searched.
Oh, I was every item of my clothing, the stitching on the jeans and everything like that.
But no, they didn't strip you. Or...
And I said, in the end, I said, was there any reason for this? They said, well, there were various things that are fairly obvious. They said, but probably the clincher was that you were wearing mirrored sunglasses and it's 11 o'clock at night. I don't know why. Look, we've all been a prat at some time.
That's the right word
and
for
it
that.
Was a very stupid thing to do. To wear those sunglasses. On the other hand, have you ever gone through the channel where you declare something?
No.
Ah. I flew into an Irish airport, and because my Auntie Mary was a smoker and a drinker,
yeah.
I had 3 bottles of vodka and 400 cigarettes. So I went through the I have something to declare channel.
Yeah.
And there was no one there. So I put my bag on the little table thing there, and I waited. And eventually this uniformed guy leaned back on his chair and looked out of his office and just went, oh, God.
I've got to do some work.
He put his peaked cap on like that. And he came out and he said, what can I do for you? I said, well, I've got more than the permitted amount. I said, it's for my Auntie Mary and I'm staying with her for a week. And he looked in the bag and he just went, she's where to go, the Auntie Mary. And I said, yeah, he just went, away with you now. And that was it. Great. And that's like, welcome to Ireland.
Oh,
isn't that?
That was very honest of you as well.
No, I'm a coward.
Really?
Having been stopped and, you know, searched, not intimately, but thoroughly once, I just didn't want to risk it again. Let's take a call, shall we? Dominic is on the line, I believe. Dominic, welcome to Talk Radio. I'm Ian Lee with a funny voice. I'm Ian Lee with a sore throat.
Well, yeah, not quite. I mean, I was actually calling to say, I know you from way, way, way back. I was a little nipper back in probably early 80s, and I used to have a little tranny under the covers and listen to you on LBC on Nightline.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to call and say, you know, it's great to hear you again on the radio. I listen to Ian quite a lot. And, you know, I just wanted to give you thanks and say you are the person who was responsible for me getting into talk radio in a really big way. And it's kind of totally it's had a big impact on my life. I'm a really big radio listener, and it was all to do with listening to you in those early days. And I came once to LBC for a push and talk. Do you remember you did that show?
Yeah, the idea of that was we got young people to come in, and there wasn't a studio that would accommodate them, so they did the we did the programme as if it was a studio audience, but in the newsroom. And the little gimmick was that everybody had to come and bring a cushion to sit on. And so that was what, you were one of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what happened is I was there with my sister and my dad, and we were in the area, and my dad had said, oh, you know, he believed the studio was in that area, and we were in London, and we wandered around, and we just kind of rocked up. I mean, I must have been, I don't know, probably about 8 or 10, something like that. Mm-hmm. And, we just kind of rocked on up at the studio and said hi, and they said, oh, there's a recording in progress, and this show is on, would you be interested? And we said, yeah, and before we knew it, you know,
it was live,
being on the show. Yeah.
Did you contribute anything, do you recall?
I did indeed. It's very sad that I actually remember what it was.
No, and, go on. Everyone remembers the first subject of rubbish pets. They talk on pets.
Yeah, that was it. It was the subject of pets. And I think I was talking about my hamster or something, and you were asking me what noise it made. And yeah, it was just a lovely kind of, that's how talk radio was. You know, it was a comforting thing. It was something you would have on in the background all the time. And I couldn't go to bed without it. And I still can't now, you know.
What do you do for a living? Is it inspired you to get into media in any way, shape, form?
Telecoms. Yeah, I work for a mobile phone company. So, in a way, I suppose, but I find now, particularly at night time, I will only drift off to sleep if I have the word in the background kind of going on, and so I set it on a sleep timer.
Interesting you say that. I don't think you're by any means unique in that. A lot of people need noise. Dominic, stay there. We're going to take a commercial break, but stay there because I want to pick up on what you've just raised, because I think it's a very interesting point. So here's some important messages. This is Talk Radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Yeah, because the business of falling asleep and what you use to fall asleep. Falling asleep is a magic moment in everybody's 24 hours, if you're lucky enough to fall asleep every time within 24 hours. And I've often wondered what it is that's been going through my head in the nanosecond before I actually fall asleep that's enabled me to fall asleep, because I'd like to recreate it at will whenever I need to have a quick sleep, but I can't. And again, it's one of those many things that we'd like to know and we don't know. And I know, Nikki, you don't always sleep as well as you'd like.
But my husband, he could sleep on a washing line. He literally can sit down on a chair and go. I'm envious of that because I can't go to sleep. I'm a really bad sleeper. Mm. I think my mind is so busy with just thinking things. The way I distract myself is I put the television on, put some rubbish on the television. I'm sort of half watching that, and that stops me thinking about other stuff, and I go off. And I always have to set my television on timer so it goes off when I'm asleep.
Have you ever used the radio to send you to sleep?
Not as much as the television.
Okay.
No, because I think if I was listening to a show like this, it would keep me awake because I'd, you know, be compelled to listen a bit longer. So that's why I put sort of quite rubbishy programmes on that send me to sleep.
That is the idea, but Dominic is not the first person who's used my professional endeavours to help him go to sleep. And you did, Dominic. You have gone to sleep listening to me.
No. I'll tell you another reason for why. I think for me in particular, I find it really helpful. I have tinnitus. It's not terrible, but I do have a constant kind of high pitched white noise.
That's awful.
Mm. And if
just in one?
Yeah, both ears.
Mate, I'm so sorry.
No, you kind of get used to it. But one of the things that you find is, particularly when trying to get to sleep, if there's no other sound around,
you hear your tinnitus,
then you concentrate on it.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that because this new film, Baby Driver, which is supposed to be very, very good, has got a really pounding soundtrack to it. And that is because one of the themes in it is that the young man, who is the greatest getaway driver in the history of crime, has to have very loud music all the time because he's got tinnitus and it drowns it out for him. And you're saying that there is some truth in that, Dominic?
There's certainly truth. I find at night times, if there is quiet, then you concentrate on the noise that you hear. Mm. And therefore, having voices talking in the background gives you something else for you. It's like tricking your brain into concentrating on something
else.
So I find it very soothing.
Let's talk about the moment of going to sleep then, because everybody listening to this, even if they're listening to the podcast, at some point in the very near future, even if it's 18 hours away, he's going to go to sleep, which is a sort of little death, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you're not aware of who you are or what you're doing. You have some terrible nightmares or some pleasant dreams. I don't get many of those. They're all a bit weird, my dreams. I think that's the case for most people. And then you wake up and you are refreshed. There's no doubt about that. But that moment of sleep is something that's always interested me. What was happening in my brain just at the point where I then am asleep? Okay. And I remember, back to Wayne Rooney here, I remember reading that Colette said, and hoovering, because I remember just reading in some little article that Colette said that she had to wait until Wayne had gone off to training before she did the vacuuming, because whenever she turned the vacuum on, if Wayne was sitting down, he'd fall asleep.
No, that was just an excuse not to have to do it.
No. I've come across that before.
They say that with babies, though, don't they?
Well, and it works.
Yes.
It works. The theory is, have you ever heard one of those tapes that you can buy to play to babies that are finding it difficult to get to sleep and they're grisly? Kath, have you had experience of those?
I've used one.
And?
Like a white noise.
White noise.
It's a slight pulse to it.
It's supposed to be the noise of
the
womb.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. It works.
Well, we found out about 18 months after our eldest was born that he tended to get peaceful around about 5 o'clock in the evening. And we gradually traced what it was that made him peaceful. And it was the Neighbours theme tune. Neighbours. Go on.
I can't
Everybody
remember.
Got a neighbour. So we sat down, we tried to work out why that was. And we figured, and we're actually certain that we're right, that when my wife was pregnant with him, one of the highlights of the day, when she was heavily pregnant, and that's very awkward and tiring and the rest of it, and a little bit anxious as well, one of the highlights of her day was making herself a cup of instant coffee and sitting down and watching Neighbours.
Wow.
And the thinking is that either he probably could hear the sound of the Neighbours theme tune. And because my wife's stress levels relaxed and went down,
it gave good vibes.
It gave good vibes. Mm. And so when Neighbours came on, now he's a separate human being, an individual human being, it still had a soporific effect on him.
I think that's right.
Quite possibly. Mm. What happens with you, Sam? Do you have such a clear conscience and a steady mind that you could sleep standing up?
No, I'd also have suffered with insomnia loads before. So I have tried a few little bits to...
Like what?
Well, they say that one of them that I found really helpful was that you set yourself timings for breathing and then you only focus on... So you breathe in for 7 seconds, then you try and breathe out for 8 seconds. Mm. And then you're just focusing on that. There's that, or there's every single night you try and think of the same story or something. Mm-hmm. So like for me... I know like a few like Disney films off the top of my head, so I just start playing one in my head.
Which one?
Toy Story. I know really, really well.
Does that?
Yeah, and then after doing that enough nights,
it gets
faster into going to sleep because
you do, don't you?
It's that your brain
you
gets
only
used
have to begin the journey because
mm-hmm.
it is a journey into sleep, isn't it?
Yeah,
and if you actually give yourself a route that does result in sleep one night. And you try it again. Yeah, you get there a little bit quicker, a little bit quicker.
Yeah, you get used to it. And so it's down to a point. Now, it used to be that it would take me 45 minutes to an hour to...
Through Toy Story, which you know that well. How many times have you seen Toy Story then?
I wouldn't say an amazing amount, but I think it was... Because it came out when I was young enough that when your brain's just a sponge. So I picked it up really easy and I know it. I can do it word for word.
Although there's worse popular culture than Toy Story. It's actually quite a profound
great
thing,
film.
Isn't it? Do you have any tricks that you use, Kath, to nod off, or are you so knackered?
I can sleep wherever.
Of course you can. Because you're
staying awake, that's a trick.
Well said, well said. Yes, there's a world record, isn't there, for staying awake. but there is not yet a world record for staying asleep. So what I do, and it works 9 times out of 10, and this is the one I've been using now for quite a few years, and I don't know where it came from or why, but England are playing Australia in the tests, and there's this remarkable 64-year-old batsman who suddenly appeared on the scene. And he sees the ball very, very well. He's averaged 600 with the bat. And this is because he's invented this method of speeding up his own metabolism so that everything else appears to be in slow motion. So when the evil Australian bowlers come in to bowl at 100 miles an hour, he sees the ball as coming down at him at about 20 miles an hour. And so he can hit it wherever he wants. And the Australians are starting to sledge him. And out he comes, and it's me, obviously. And out he comes, and the Australians start to sledge him. So to take revenge, every time a ball is bowled, he hits it towards the shins of the Australian fielders who have been sledging him. And gradually they come to realise that they cannot possibly carry on sledging this valiant 64-year-old new sporting hero from London. And I used to fall asleep around about the second or third delivery.
What made you start with that?
I've no idea.
But it works.
I have no idea. It started with the idea that if you could speed your metabolism up sufficiently, then everything else would appear to be happening in slow motion.
That's a good, yeah.
And so I got the idea that because we are basically driven by electricity, if you're able to get the right sort of electrical current going through your body and monitor it so that you turn it up or down, then you'll speed your metabolism up or slow it down if you can actually control the electrical impulses that are going through your body.
Yeah.
And so I thought the best use I could put that invention to would be cricket.
If it works,
if
fine.
It works, it works.
Yeah,
exactly. The worst thing about my going to sleep technique is that I share it with Jeffrey Archer.
What, that same story?
Sort of. He imagines himself going out to open the batting for England against Australia, I read.
Really?
Hopefully that's all I've got in common with him. You're listening to Talk Radio. It's now, it's something like 1:15. We've got about 15 minutes to go. And right after this impending commercial break, we will announce, in our view, who is the most irritating celebrity in the UK today.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We're going to have one more go at listening to a trail for a piece of radio lasting an hour that was broadcast 20 years ago. We're pretending that it's because we're discussing the journey that radio has made over the last 20 years and whether it's good or bad. But actually, it's just an excuse to laugh at the kind of rubbish that I was doing then. Here we go.
Sex is a huge subject. So the first time is one of the biggest moments in our lives. But is it one of the best?
We take you now to Tommy Boyd's bedroom 25 years ago.
Oh, go on, please. My parents won't be back for ages.
No.
I do love you.
Oh, go on.
I mean, if you loved me...
No.
I did pay for the meal.
What?
I'm getting a car when I go to college.
They all say that.
Oh, go on. I'll introduce you to Peter Dealey.
All right, then.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Is that it?
I'm Tommy Boyd. That's today from 2. The first time. With a drop of Dutch courage, someone you'll never forget, and a knowing smile that lasts for days. On Talk Radio. Yeah. That's a good argument for listeners.
Do you know what, actually... That is a bloody good topic, actually.
Yeah.
That is a bloody...
Straight away.
I want to do an hour on that now.
Straight away.
Everybody has got
that image of that person.
Story.
Where you were, what happened.
Yes. In a nutshell, what was yours?
Very fast. And outside on a very cold night. Terrible.
I don't know Sam and Kath well enough to ask them, and it's entirely their business whether they mention it, so I probably won't.
Sam's looking very coy.
I don't think they'd mind, but I'm not going to.
Go on, let's ask Sam.
Well, ask them if they mind. I don't mind if you'd rather not.
I'll tell you, I don't
go
mind.
Go on, then.
We've been going out for about 6 months, and I have a very strict dad. So it was really the first opportunity, which was... I went on this sort of induction course at Cambridge University, and they sent like the top kids from there. And it, fortunately enough, my boyfriend at the time was one of the kids that got sent along there. So it was in a very romantic setting, but like you say, probably about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Really?
Poor lad.
Outside or inside?
No, at Corpus Christi College.
first shag was at Corpus Christi.
Corpus Christi College, yeah.
Oh, thank God, that is such a credential, isn't it? Really, can you imagine? You're probably, you know, you're probably in there with, I don't know, Peeps, Wren,
Christopher Marlowe.
Marlowe.
Sadly, well, maybe it was a prophecy, but I didn't get in again.
Beautifully put. You have an affinity for this sort of radio, don't you?
It's something about this hour, isn't there, of sort of being a bit more confessional.
What do you mean, the late hour?
Yeah.
Yes, I think you change the pace completely, yeah. And you do tend to imagine somebody listening alone in bed under the covers or with an earpiece in or whatever. Definitely, you've got to do that. You've got to try and work out how it is for the listener. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and intimate as well. That's
yes. Romantic Sam? Setting, less than yes. Romantic scenario.
Yeah, lovely romantic setting. What beautiful setting could there be?
Is this my turn now?
Come on, Sam.
Location, it was very uninteresting, standard. It was the fact that we were caught.
Oh, no!
That was
by?
Her mother.
At what point?
It was, I'd say it was solidly finished.
Okay.
But it...
afterwards.
Yeah.
But only just afterwards.
Only just.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And how long had you been together?
6 months.
And had you met Mother before?
Yes.
But not in those circumstances.
No.
What did she say? What did she do?
It was a blur to me, because obviously... What happened? It was pretty much just she sat on the bed, very disappointed. The awkward thing was the day afterwards, though, was that... my girlfriend was working, and so I'd had to stay at her house with her parents, just the three of us. That was awkward. Luckily, though, it was the mum and not the dad, because I reckon if it was the dad, I would have been slung out the house.
Yes. It's huge in everybody's life, isn't it?
Yeah.
That trail actually wasn't too bad. When I heard sex, me's going, like, where's this one going? But that trail wasn't too bad at all. I can't remember the programme, though. Oh, go on, can we play one more? Because this is... I'm actually getting a whiff of nostalgia here, as well as finding myself laughing.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Time was when you flew. The jet set were the jet set. Elegant women smoking cigarettes in cigarette holders and Cary Grant lookalikes sipping martinis. Nowadays, when you fly, it's all tattooed, beer-bellied, builders, bummed Brickies with their polyester shod husbands. We've got first class, we've got second class, and now we've got underclass. So why not give them their own airline?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. Shortly, the cabin staff will be coming amongst you for a weapons search and to get their kit off for the lads. Shortly, the duty-free trolley will be coming down the aisles with a selection of Union flag underwear, homebrew, and erotica. Cabin doors to automatic, please. Here we go.
Tommy Boyd, today from 2 on Talk Radio. There's a good argument for listening.
Well, that's happened, hasn't it? That actually was ahead of its time. Yeah. We I'm not going to name names, but we do. I don't know if they come down with after a weapons search with erotica. What made me laugh more than anything else was the very authentic cabin doors to manual. What was that for? Cabin doors to manual. They do say it like that, don't
they? Yeah.
Cabin doors to manual. What does it mean? I think I'm the only person who doesn't know, but what does cabin doors to manual mean? It means that when you're flying, the door is automatically locked.
Locked, yes.
And so when you land...
they release it.
Something
there's
like
some
that.
Some sort of thing that they lift up, don't they? And then they can open it manually.
Whilst we're talking about flying and sex, because we... Nearly. I'm in the nearly 5 mile club. How about you?
I'm the same as you, nearly.
Ah, nearly. Anybody actually in the 5 mile club? No. We've got to find out who is the most irritating personality, celebrity, in the United Kingdom. And we've got a couple of minutes in which to do it. And I'm going to put Kath on the spot right now. We've carefully worked our way through a long list of 70, a short list of 20. And she is being asked now to make the final decision. And she'll be greeted with howls of derision, I know, whatever she comes up with. But here's the fanfare moment then. And it is.
It's not massively original, but it's the only one that's, I think, universally mm-hmm. derided as being irritating. Mm-hmm. Bono. I know you wanted Greg Wallace.
I did.
He's disappointed.
I mean, he does insist on using the big spoon when he should use a smaller one. But...
Yes.
It's really hard to find it, because irritating isn't quite as strong as hated, is it?
Next time. Next time.
I have a list ready.
Who would you have picked then? You would have gone Greg.
Oh, he wanted one of the chefs.
I wanted one of the chefs, and I think Greg Wallace, because of the tweet back to the person who was doing a charity bike ride.
Mm.
Could you possibly give me a tweet? I'm raising money and awareness for, you know, people with life-threatening illnesses. And I don't think I have to say allegedly. I think it's accepted. It was because the guy retweeted it.
Yeah.
So it's out there. But he just tweeted back to just Greg with 2 G's at the end, and that was all he seemed bothered about. So he got this lovely response from the guy who was doing the cycle ride saying, yeah, you're quite right, it's silly of me thinking about all these people who are carrying terminal illnesses when the main thing obviously is to
Right, Greg Wallace.
You guilted her into
dear
it.
Dear me, we need me, don't we, out there doing the negotiating, because I do not give up. Thick as mints, he was called by a fellow politician, David Davis. And I'd never heard the phrase before.
No, I've never heard that. Thick as mince.
Thick as mince, M-I-N-C-E.
M-C-E, that sort of mince.
As in, as in beef mince. Yeah. It's a nice phrase, but I'd not heard it before. When you haven't heard a phrase like that before, and it does what it says on the tin, it really sings, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The chap who said about all the discussions, the politician who said of all the alleged discussions about plots and coups within the government, within the Conservative Party, to take over from Theresa May, and people stabbing each other in the back and leaking things that were said at Cabinet. He dismissed it beautifully by saying, oh, too much summer sun and warm Prosecco. Was such a good line. You know, and it's been bandied about for the last fortnight because it is so potent. Because Prosecco is a lovely drink, but it's not champagne. And so his implication is that that these are members of the Conservative Party who can't afford the real thing at their summer garden parties. And so not only do they have to serve Prosecco, which, by the way, is very good, but they can't even be bothered to keep the damn thing cold. So it was damning.
Very clever.
It was absolutely brilliant. Well, we've had a good go at trying to be Ian Lee, but there is only one Ian Lee, and he will be back incumbent on Monday at 10 o'clock. In the meantime, I'd like to say a heartfelt thank you very much indeed to Nikki Keg-Shevlin for being in the studio with me. And I'd also like to say a great thank you to Sam. Thank you very much indeed, Sam, for your help. And also to Kath. And we've got 30 seconds before the news. So I'm not going to do another EU silly law thing. What I'm going to do, if you'll allow me to indulge myself, Nikki, is just say a very good night to any listener who is listening, snuggling up and on their own, and maybe has a transistor radio under the blankets, or maybe by the bed, or maybe you're listening on earphones. And so this is almost the one-on-one that radio is supposed to be. I just want to say, I think it will be all right. And I love you.